This is something you just haven't really got. It's just recorded the whole meeting. So then, PMG.
Morning, members. My apologies that I'm late. Could only have been the jazz. Just being honest. No, I'm lying. I had to go to Johannesburg. Came back last night. We have a program that takes departments and four entities. Three entities. In other words, there are eight altogether. We've split them into four of each day. We shall realize that we have structured a program in such a manner that those that come today, in our view, are most deserving to be handled first because of their situation, which I'm sure we will catch as we move forward. And then we'll start off with the we thought we were going to deal with the land bank tomorrow included. But they've just been informed from the secretary that they haven't as yet tabled in parliament. So we have a program, as we see, members and also DG and your colleagues. Good morning. Without really waste of time, we shall hand over directly to the DG, the leader. I'm not sure who is with him. I'm sure he will introduce his team. And the entities will also introduce their own teams. Thank you, without waste of time.
Thank you very much, and good morning. I hope you've survived the weekend. What we are going to do, first let me introduce my team. I'm here, chairperson, together with my DTGs as well as the entities. I won't introduce the entities, I think they'll introduce themselves as the program unfolds. Part of what my DTGs for corporate services. Mr. Tom Mela, our CFO, Mr. Chachwayo, and the DG responsible for resources, Dr. Rambeki, responsible for agricultural production, Dr. Mkhojana, and the technician is Mr. Smoor. And then we've got Mr. Dr. Mashaba, who heads the office. And then I've got Mimi here, who works with our policy monitoring and evaluation. So that's our team. I think the members are fairly aware of that. I think that what we'll be presenting to you, Chair, and one member, is our threat plan for this year and the unfolding of our pipeline. What will be in particularly be focusing on this year, because I think the outlying years will be coming here to report it. So, in terms of the precepts around my responsibilities, I'm happy to present this threat plan to you, which indicates what we'll be focusing on over this particular financial year. Now, what I will not be doing, Chair, is to take you through the complex maze of steps. I think this one could be good reading for members in their leisure. What I will do to also accommodate time, we'll look at the concrete challenges facing the sector and what we're doing to respond to this. So I will restrict myself to that. So the information before page 38. Locate the context of the set of seven set of goals, effects, challenges, etc. We will not go to that. But we're just going to the concrete issues of assessment. I want to say that the challenge facing our sector is amongst us, the unregulated market environment, which exposes the sector to fluctuations in oil prices. There's also the shifting share of field crops in favor of other crops, such as horticultural crops, etc. In production. And also our country is moving from being a net exporter of foods to a net importer. In terms of the where money is made in the sector, there's a growing dominance of retail chains and an increasing farmer to retail price differential. What that means is that farmers are not getting much. Most of the money that is made in the sector is in the retail network. It's a challenge that we've got to look at going forward, because it's not a sustainable differential. Another challenge is a high input cost, particularly fertilizer, fuel, and feedstock. We also have policy skill subsistence and emerging farmers who are at this stage only achieving low production volumes and a very low productivity level. There is a lack of agricultural spatial planning and poor infrastructure, which makes it difficult for farmers to raise buyers to access markets and keep safe. There's also poor information and knowledge management for smallholder farmers, which prevents them from correctly addressing production challenges. As well as an agricultural R&D agenda, which has little impact on the growth and development of the sector. This latter point, if you look in the original document, it's not there. What we have done, honorable members, has been to refine some of the document that is with you. We refined certain typos and certain expressions just to properly prepare for today. Furthermore, in terms of challenges in the sector, there's increasing concentration, particularly in the commercial sector, in which we're having smaller but more efficient businesses. And that these smaller companies, smaller farms, are able to take advantage of increasing economies of scale as smaller players are being forced out of the sector. Profitability has increased, but at slower rates, and it's attributed to a concentrated few that have been able to survive global market and financial challenges. Transformation remains a challenge. The different sectors of the country, which fisheries, agriculture, and forestry, have different levels of accomplishment when it comes to transformation. For instance, fisheries doesn't have necessarily a transformation charter, but it has moved quite some distance in transformation. We still have to finalize our approach to transformation in the agricultural sector, as well as in the forest sector. But in forest, for instance, we have a forest charter council that operates. As I said earlier on, the challenge of the an increase in horticultural products, whilst the other field crops, such as those that are possible maize, etc., are being are less lucrative, and therefore farmers are shifting to horticultural products. Something that we need to look at very closely, because it might have implications for security. Another challenge is increasing food prices as well as anti-competitive behavior, which also can impact on food security. We're also seeing that there's limited innovation systems, slow rate of opening up markets, and value-adding opportunities, however, are challenges on certain commodities. Again, that's not in the original presentation, it's from the 2014 now. Then the challenge is from a lack of compliance rather than a lack of appropriate regulation. So you've got a challenge of poor enforcement, something that we have got to work on and improve on. Coming to smallholder farmers, what we say there is that we still have got inadequate support services for smallholder farmers. I'm working on this, and my colleagues are here. Mr. Magaba, what is introduced to me is our DDG for food security, that in which an agrarian reform, in which extension services are located. If there's further discussion on that, we will elaborate. Technical support is currently inadequate, and there's a need to upscale and expand the support that we offer. As we said earlier on, we've got uncoordinated partial plans to guide the implementation of support programs. It's something that we're working on. There is already a plan. There's a team, actually, that has been working over the past 2-3 months, working with provinces to ensure that we've got coherence when it comes to our partial plan. We also have got inadequate and unstructured interventions with regard to provision of on-farm infrastructure, such as water sources, dams, windmills, irrigation schemes, etc. Again, working with other departments, pastoral development and public works, all of you addressing the issues. We are presently in discussion because we've got a small budget around this kind of work. Of course, our sister departments have got more, so we're working with them. And there's a commitment to ensure that we are able to offer those kind of services. Okay, there's also lack of support for established smallholders with regard to commodity groups. People still produce or plant what they want to plant. There's not a common approach or a strategic approach that ensures that smallholders are linked to established commodity groups. Okay? There's a challenge of organization in that regard. Again, we have not done enough work around agro-processing. We're happy to report to the community that there's good work that's working in this regard. It's part of our special plans. We were saying that, for instance, that we would want for every municipality to focus on certain crops, and that those crops should be value-added in that particular area, so that we can bring value addition closer to where smallholders are. There's also no guaranteed market for products. Smallholders are working with this. We think that our campaign and our program of zero hunger will go a long way in addressing this access to market. We're also attending to the challenge of access to development finance, working together with other partners such as the Land Bank, but also with the Provincial Department of Agriculture to ensure that we've got a cohesive way of giving financial support to smallholder farmers, as well as issue of training. Coming to some of the challenges with regard to the fishing sector, we believe that we need to go some way in establishing hatcheries, okay, as well as attend the issue of research and disease management of marine life. So we're working in this area, but it's still a challenge for us. We now have a program. We've identified aquaculture development zones across the three of our provinces, and it's something that we are ready to enroll a program of, and we will indicate that. There is no support for the establishment of smallholders in the fishery industry, unlike in agriculture, where there is cast. There are those similar programs in fisheries. We are looking at speaking to the treasury so that we can have more money to establish such financial support for them. Again, we still have to build an agro-processing capacity in agriculture, particularly for new entrants in the sector. Now, what is the policy framework that informs our work? Okay. One of the members will recall that in the January 2010 Cabinet of Quota, 12 outcomes were announced. what is significant for us, which is also part of our deliberate agreement, are the three outcomes that are referred to here. One is outcome four, we deal with the design employment through inclusive economic growth. Outcome seven, we commit government to create a vibrant, equitable, sustainable rural communities contributing towards food security for all. And outcome 10, which talks about protection and enhancement of our environmental assets and natural resources. Yeah. Also guided on November by EPUB 2, the new growth path, okay, which locates us the second most important sector towards operation in the country, as well as our own integrated growth and development path plan. And lastly, the strategic plan for smallholder farmers, in which we are in a very clear, let's say, bold way, we are making very clear pronouncements on what we seek to do to support smallholder farmers. Now, in terms of our commitment here, we see ourselves building over the next 5 years 50,000 new smallholder farmers. I'm aware, honorable members, that in this regard, a lot still needs to be done. There's a lot of information in the department and in the sectors everywhere. There's information in the presidency. There's information that we can elicit from CAS, some of the beneficiaries that are giving finance to the open self agriculture, to establish, and also the South Africa, to establish how many smallholder farmers do we have. But from the information we've been given, that there are about 200,000 existing smallholder farmers. It is still a challenge to understand who are these home bodies, where are they. Okay? We've got the information, but more work has to be done to establish indeed who are they, what's their, yes, what are they doing, etc. That information lies lying all over the show. We are presently working with our statistics division to get the gist of this kind of information. Also, we are hoping that over the coming 5 years, we will build 20,000 more jobs to our commercial farm. We aim to place 300,000 households in smallholder farms by 2014. Okay? Ensuring that people can come together around these commodity strategies or these commodity schemes. People being organized to farm goats, bring all goat farmers together, you know, under one scheme, etc., etc., and so that we can help them in their association. Also, a committee to creating about 145,000 jobs in aquaculture by 2020, as well as 5,520 jobs in computer program, also at the end of this term. As well as we had 16.2 million hectares of cassava land again at the end of the term. We're looking at working through aquaculture and other regulatory mechanisms to ensure that we recover our fish stocks. Those are the commitments that we're making. Now, coming to the broad framework of our intervention. In terms of the medium-term strategic framework, okay, we want to create a comprehensive rural development strategy linked to land and agrarian reform and food security. Okay? Yeah. The key outcomes here would be the creation of a vibrant, equitable, sustainable rural communities contributing towards food security for all. And our strategic goals in this regard would be to increase profitable production of food, fiber, and timber products by all categories of producers. Another MTS priority area is to speed up economic growth and transform the economy to create decent work and sustainable livelihoods. Okay. As a result of this, we will have a decent employment as an outcome for inclusive economic growth. Our goals being to increase the profitable production of food, fiber, and timber products by all categories of producers, ensuring that we transform the entire sector, as well as increase the contribution of the sector to economic growth and development. another policy area is sustainable resource management and use through an outcome in which the outcome is to protect and enhance our environmental assets in our natural resources, good doing sustainable management of our natural resources, effective national regulatory services, as well as attending to the size of risk. Globally, we're looking at pursuing regional development, African enhancement, and enhanced international cooperation, create a better world as an outcome, and effective and efficient governance as one of the three goals. In this regard, remember, I want to say that we are presently working with one of our parastatals, in particular to look at what we're planning to do with BRICS. I was in China 2 weeks ago, and I met my counterpart in China, and we have made a commitment that we'll try and work together to see what it is that we can bring, you know, to countries, hoping to make, take advantage of the big market that is there in China. So we're working on that. So we are working to look at what are the opportunities for us in India, in Brazil, in Russia, and in China. Because we think that if we can locate ourselves and participate effectively in this economy, it could mean only good things for us. But it comes with challenges. These economies are very robust, are very efficient, so we must also attend to our own efficiency in that regard. Another priority area is massive programs to build economic and social infrastructure, and accompanying an efficient, competitive, and responsive economic infrastructure network. And our strategic goals in this regard are to increase possible production of food, fuels, and chemical products by all categories of producers. We need to attend our skills base and ensure that a key outcome is to have the skills and a capital workforce to support inclusive growth, as well as the strategic goal in this regard being increased, being the effective and efficient governance, as well as the from the United States. The rest is the good night reading for honorable members. Let's go on. Coming to administration. Okay. Our administration broadly involves the following division. It's policy planning and monitoring, corporate services, stakeholder relations, and the chief financial officer. All of them contribute to our administration. Now, in terms of the strategic intervention that we were hoping to achieve through our administration, is to facilitate and support the establishment of commodity structures and associations. We would hope that in this coming year, we will have achieved 8% of smallholder farmers to participate in the commodity association. And the indicator here over the period is that 30% of farmers should be organized in the producer association. Where you may see that our commitments are not very bold, but we think that we need to have the correct start if we're going to be able to sustain our intervention. Also, we want to establish, we're working towards this one-stop development fund that gives rounded support to smallholders. Okay. Our target would be that in this financial year, we'll be able to offer such a service to 10,000 smallholder farmers, as well as 10,000 subsistence farmers. Now, there's a discussion here that was involved in this department. We are hoping that the honorable members can guide us also on how to approach it. To what extent should you colleagues talk about subsistence farmers? Should we not really be talking about smallholder farmers? People who can, even if they're small, are participating in market linkages. Because at the end of the day, those are most sustainable. But we don't want to close that debate. We think that one of the members of parliament, one of the custodians of policy, can help us refine this kind of discussion. We are discussing this because we feel that we must talk about sustainability and whether subsistence economy is sustainable, can think increasing extent as commercial farming can do. It's a debate. We want some discussion of it. Then also talking about the value chain financing model, in which in particular we're trying to help those distressed farmers to rebuild their companies, their farms, and to put the money on a better foundation for sustainable development. We also are looking at improving our relationship with our government colleagues, so that we can align with them comprehensively. One of the challenges that we need to attend to is the is regard to the Marine Living Resources Act, and we'll look at again improving their relationship with us. We're looking at building number small scale fisheries, organizing community based entities, starting with about 5, you see. Now, this involves lots of community mobilization and participation, because we've got a particular model that seeks to lock in individual fisher folk into a community enterprises that are more sustainable than isolated individual small scale fishers who have no chance at all to effectively participate in it. So we've been working on this model, and we're hoping to implement it this year. Another challenge for us in administration is to update and align policies and plans for national, provincial, and local spheres to the electoral mandate and to the medium-term strategic framework. The indicator here will be an effective planning system for the sector. We want this year to align our plans with the presidential outcomes and targets. Again, in the same regard, we want to align our strategies, business and implementation plans as a part of the indicator, and so that this year we can again implement this aligned system. We would want again to review our policies and work on them this year. We're talking about targeted R&D program that has to be developed. We're emphasizing targeted R&D because we're hoping that our parasitic as the ARC, much as they'll be doing research, we hope it won't only be fundamental research. One research that is relevant to our smallholder farmers and to farmers in general. So it has to be targeted, it has to be aligned to our strategy. If we've got a strategy around promoting agro-processing, we'd work with the research that we'll be getting from our parasitic talks to those challenges. We also want to work on comprehensive economic reports for the sector so that we're on top of what's happening in the sector, including working on our database. So that the issues we're working on in this financial year. The rest of the outlying year, again, is good nitrating for honorable member. Why have we money time with Chapel? Again, we have to review our PMDS systems for policy monitoring. And the indicator here is the percentage of performance management and development systems that are adhered to. We would want to ensure that in this one, 80% adherence to our PMDS system. That again, we look at reduction of our vacancy rate, and we achieve this by 14% this year. We have to train our SMS members in disciplinary procedure. Okay? We want to achieve 60% of this. Because part of management must combine both the carrot and the stick. So we must also have the capacity to wield the stick. So we want to develop that capacity as well. Coming to welfare, to wellness of our members, we want to increase the number of service points, wellness, and one service point per province, in which people can come and talk about their own stress, challenges, etc. was one to reduce the percentage of the disease burden and reduce it by 10% this coming year. We also want to improve our adherence to security policies and systems. One of the challenges that we have was we will not have the mandate to establish security policy system, but we want to review the efficacy of the present one. That's what we'll be doing this year. Again, we want to review the Marine Living Resources Act and its alignment to the broad Department of the World. A draft bill will be submitted to cabinet this year. Coming to the improvement of our financial systems and practices, the indicator here is the compliance with existing prescripts, procedures, and guidelines. We want to achieve unqualified audit reports on our financial statement and improve customer satisfaction by 25%. Again, comes strategic intervention in our organization. We want to align the communication strategies to the government's national communication strategy, as well as our knowledge and information management system. Wanted to it implemented this year, and as well as to approve the communication strategies around our management system. We want an effective ICT system. Members will recall that we have what three departments, and each had their own ICT system. We're working now to integrate the system with 100% alignment in education this year. So all in all, honorable members, with regard to our administration, okay, we would want to achieve the following outputs this year. Is the ICT system that's migrated and integrated, want an approved integrated MSP for DAF, an approved team strategy, 14% reduction in vacancy rate, 60% of SMS members trained on disciplinary procedures, 20 human resource management policies aligned and approved, adherence to PMDS by all staff members, an approved human resource development strategy, plan and treatment implementation thereof, an approved framework on health and wellness to ensure reduction to disease burden, 10 approved media plans, a project, comprehensive stakeholder relations strategy to organize farmers into producer associations, and 9 commodity structures established, approved and accredited international fisheries strategy, an approved credible approved fisheries database, a consultative advisory forum with comprehensive plan, functional community-based entities with comprehensive stakeholder strategy, and an approved value chain financial financing model. 10,000 smallholders and distressed farmers accessing financial services, and 284 distressed farmers funded. These are the key outputs for the financial year. That's the allocation of the money again. So that's 19. Coming to economic development, trade, and marketing. For this financial year and for the upcoming year, we want to facilitate and support the establishment of commodity structures and associations. Okay? I think that 30% of smallholder farmers should organize to commodity associations and cooperatives. Okay? We want to establish 12 commodity associations this year, okay? And 90 cooperatives to be established. Okay. We also want to facilitate the development and implementation of sector charters and strategies. The indicator being value chain networks must be established and institutionalized. And this year we want to create grain value chain networks. Coming to sector charter implementation, want to process or facilitate the implementation of 10 agri deals, and then we want to gather section 9 of the agri charter, okay, this year. Now that's something new that was not in the original presentation that we have on that. We want to ensure that the forest charter is implemented, and we also want to release the study on the status of transformation in the fisheries sector. still on strategic intervention. We want to facilitate the development and implementation of the sector startup and strategies. The indicator is the sector strategies must be developed and implemented for this financial year. We want an SME strategy that's aligned to the GTI strategy. We can't have too many positives in this one government. So if the GTI is hitting us in economic development, we want to align our own approaches to that. Similarly, we want three strategies that provide important quota readiness training to 20 developing farmers in place, as well as to 12 commodity groups trained on marketing skills. We believe that it is better to do things to work on commodity groups than individual farmers, because if you got a strategy for on commodity groups that are, let's say, potato commodity group or beans, etc., you would work on pamphlets and workshops, targeted information to a group of people that will just work on one or two or three farmers. Want a more comprehensive approach than individualized approach. We want to also promote agro-processing, job creation initiatives, and strategies as an indicator. In this regard, together with GTI and economic development, we are already working together to establish a plan for processing plans and strategies. That's what we're working on this year. Again, still on economic development and marketing, we want to facilitate intra-Africa trade on DAF products by promoting the export of value-added trade. The indicator is increased intra-Africa trade. In this regard, we'll be working on the establishment of a free trade area that involves SADC, East Africa Community, and commerce. We also want to implement our agreement. We'll talk about three inter-Africa agreements to be signed. Five international agreements also will be signed this year. We felt that it would not be fair to indicate which countries these are because of diplomatic sensibility. But we are already in place, in motion to establish this, as well as monitor our involvement in IPSA. As well as develop that strategic approach to BRICS. Okay. I've already spoken about this area. Just maybe to say that by stroke of luck or by the intervention of the gods, when I was in China, I also happened to meet my counterpart, the DG of India, and they are very keen to work with us. We already have an MOU with them, and they also want to draw us in what is called an Afro-Asia Act on Agricultural Development. We are working towards a visit to that country by June. So our output here on November is to have 12 commodity associations established, 90 cooperatives established, a grain value chain network established, implementation of Agri-BE and then Agri-BE deals facilitated, Section 9 of the Agri-BE Charter gazetted, Forestry Charter implemented, study on the status of transformation within the fisheries sector released, SMME strategy developed support small enterprises aligned with GTI, 20 developing farmers trained on important exporter readiness, 400 farmers trained on marketing skills, DAF, GTI and EDD, agro-processing plan strategies aligned for job creation initiatives, free trade area with SADC, EAC and COMESA, Inter-Africa agreement signed, five international agreements signed, and then monitor our involvement in IPSA and in BRICS. Again, we would want the same breadth so that sector business policy is developed to guide sector strategies, 100 small business supported for training, 6 partnership agreements signed by all parties, 100 entrepreneurs and farmers trained, cooperation agreement for enterprise development support signed, and 3 partnerships established within the value chain. In the credit semester for the sector approved, normal. These are some of the things that I thought this is a typo. Let's move on. one is we would want six staff functional and staff offices in strategic countries. Now, this is important. We are saying that we would want because of the strategic implications of BRICS. We want now senior people in Russia promoting agriculture, in Brazil, in India, in China. Okay. We want to ensure that we've got functioning offices there with some of our own senior people working there to ensure that we can secure the markets in these growth centers of the world. So something very important for us. We'll also be looking at the marketing of agricultural products, Amendment B. It should be gazetted. Agricultural products, Amendment B, also to be gazetted. Approving the program to link farmers to markets, as well as work on a logistics program. Now, this is assuming particular centrality in our work, both with regard to commercial agriculture. Because one of the things that commercial agriculture has been raising with the leadership of the government is the difficulties of in our logistics system. Okay? We don't have enough trains that are connected to areas that are central to our agriculture. Again, we are also saying that in the context of smallholder agriculture, which is mainly found in our former homeland, we must address the logistics of that. We're working with a center that we are funding in Stellenbosch, because we've got a chair of agro-logistics. We're working with him and some other parties to ensure that we've got a vibrant logistics framework. We also work on marketing assistance scheme, as well as tariff policy implementation reports we should be working on. We're looking at approving an agro-processing strategy, an export promotion strategy for value-added products, and agro-processing industry profile completed, together with agro-processing support measures, brochure to be developed, and as well as agro-processing industry associations to be established. So we are indeed responding to the call of the President to upscale the role of rural development in the work of government. So these were the values of the money that for this coming year. And then I would say, good night reading for our coordinator. Food and security and agrarian reform. Here, Honorable Members, our interventions seek to facilitate the implementation of training of existing personnel in technical and generic skills. The indicator we will hear will be the number of extension personnel who should receive training. For this financial year, we are looking at 1,500 extension officers who will receive training, as well as to develop an appropriate policy towards improvement of extension service. The elaboration of the latter, I will invite Mr. Wangavan to say more on it. We are looking at other interventions, such as special projects that could really help us in this regard. We also want to provide appropriate training for new producers. We are looking at every year to train 15,000 new producers, okay, in agricultural production. We are looking also at agricultural colleges being transformed into training institutions and centers of excellence. This year we'll approve the agricultural training institutions, then training institutes green paper. We should look at norms and standards for agricultural training institutions. The good thing about some of this work is this location. We'll look at revising, for instance, a number of these training colleges that were formerly in the former homeland, to reposition them, to empower them, to upscale and upgrade their work. Now, again, we will be working here with the Department of Higher Education. Okay? We are working very closely with our colleagues in these other departments because we don't have money for everything, but we feel that there's scope for cooperative governance and closer, where there's a meeting scheduled to look at this thing between us and higher education, I think, in 2 weeks' time. So we're looking forward to that partnership. Then monitoring compliance to food security policy. We are looking at approving this year a food security policy for the country. That was the indicator, and that's what we are hoping to achieve this year. More importantly, we are also looking at implementing the zero hunger strategy. We can elaborate this if members want more information, but I think at the appropriate time we will come and brief comprehensively members on this. But for now, I think more information around this on the zero hunger strategy, etc., will be presented by the minister in their budget stage. We'll spend more time on that at the budget stage. Continuing with food security and agrarian reform, we want to provide comprehensive support to new producers, as I've already indicated, Then monitor compliance to the mechanization policy. Now, one of you must are aware that we have been providing tractor, providing funds for the acquisition of tractors. We want to take this a step further and have a policy to support those interventions so that we don't just help the producer buy tractors, but we do not follow through that money. We are following through the money that we're putting on our number. We don't give money and not follow it. We don't do that. We follow the money now. So that we can ensure that the money achieves what we are supposed to be done with it. Then let's rush through this one. So basically, you can see the issue that we're hoping to look at engineering as well as look at auditing what we're doing in the transformation of the sector. Our output here is the National Food Security Policy, which should be approved. The Durahan Assertivity, that should be approved. 15,000 new smallholder producers supported. Mechanization policies approved. Again, the rest good night reading. Then, access to production, health and food safety. Here, we want to create an environment and partnership for the support of the production strategy. And the challenge here will be the indicator of the number of commodity strategies implemented. We'll look at four commodity strategies for this financial year. We want to ensure that we can work with our people around realizing or participating in effectively in four commodities. We also want to implement the other individual first state to first the program and schemes and support packages of smallholder farmers. And the indicator here will be the implementation of commodity strategies. It will also be the number of animal schemes that will be implemented and monitored, so the F9. The percentage of veterinary coverage which should be deployed in the community service. We're working to complete that framework. Also working on a number of animal identification marks. We'll look at 32,000 animals, and number of export facilities that will be inspected will be 20. Number of draft approved laboratories will be 24 this year, as well as two surveillance reports. Surveillance reports, as Dr. Mukhazan will operate, a very detailed report, misuse of information, and we're hoping to publish at least two of them, as well as four cases reports. Continuing again with agriculture production, health and food safety, we want to increase the number of regulatory compliance and monitoring interventions. The indicator will be on the number of reports on regulatory compliance and monitoring interventions. We'll look at four for this year. Number of support interventions implemented. We're looking at the regulatory support portal on phytosanitary measures and any warning systems, etc. We're also looking at creating an enabling environment for partnerships with other government departments and stakeholders for an efficient biosecurity system. The indicator will be approved regulatory framework instruments, and in particular, one will be doing work on fertilizers, Farm Fields Act, and the Liquor Products Act. Here are our outputs. I won't read all of them, but quickly, it should be 9 annual production schemes, 4 commodity strategies implemented, amended Veterinary and Paravet Act to finalize 32,000 IT certificates for etc. Then the members can look at that. They can also start to review. What was the future quickly on forest and natural resources management? Here we want to create an enabling environment for planting 40,000 hectares. We want to, the indicator will be the number of hectares planted, and we want to implement the forest sector charter for planting 10,000 hectares of forest trees. We want to offer to provide support to 10,000 new small growers, and we want to create a system. We are on 2,500 of those. We'd like to support the refurbishment and maintenance of 2,000 smallholder government education schemes, and our target is 0.5% of those schemes. And finally, our intervention will seek to achieve 5,200 jobs opportunities and 1,300 of those through further training. Again, our interventions to develop and implement disaster risk mitigation strategies. Okay, we want this year to have a disaster risk management system that developed. We want to work on climate change to develop plans to adapt to climate change. We want to rehabilitate 3,200 hectares, and this year at least we could start off with 800 hectares. We want to increase the number of hectares of agricultural land under rehabilitation, and this year we're aiming at rehabilitating 800,000 hectares. We want to develop and implement disaster risk mitigation strategies, and for this year again to develop disaster management system. There are the outputs here: 100 transportation licenses to be issued, 10,000 hectares to be forested, 12 jobs through wetland tank conversion and application created, etc. Coming to the last one, sir, fisheries management. Our intervention here involves full-scale fisheries policy. Okay? We want to finalize that policy and implement it in the financial year. Okay? We want to increase the number of fish farms from 84 to 96. There's a lot of opportunities and space here. We are only contributing 1% of aquaculture production in Africa, and that was the most developed economy in Africa. It's pathetic. So we want to improve that and take our lead share of that sector. So we want to develop a national aquaculture strategy and action plan. Okay? Some of this is already in place, as we've already identified aquaculture zones, etc., etc. So there's advanced we're giving this. Squash challenges that are doing is also attending to the challenges of aquaculture. Committee empowerment and support through working for fisheries program, we want to build 50 committee projects, and then 10 of them will be done this year. Another intervention is on fisheries research to inform the total allowable catch and stock recovery strategy. We would want this year to develop a recovery plan for Apollo, for Hague, for West Coast rock lobster, and for lionfish. We are working, as we've been working since last year, on integrated fisheries security strategy. We want to approve and implement such a strategy this year. Okay? We've been working on it, involving our engagement with cabinet and guidance by cabinet. Stakeholder engagement, management, and communication. We want to have a number of stakeholder forums, because fishing is a very animated sector, to put it mildly. So people are very active in the fishing sector, and we want to constantly engage with them so that they do not feel that government is leaving them behind. I've already mentioned the fishery strategy. Then the commercial fishing rights, marine resource strategy, the indicator for commercial fishing rights. We want to revise the rights allocation policies in affected sectors. nothing to offer to the evaluation or the performance of those who are having rights presently. Our outputs here, five new fish farms to be established, five fish farms to be revitalized, aquaculture development zones to be established, sector support of fisheries transformation published, two fishing processing facilities to be established, three fishing harbors to be proclaimed, 10 working for fisheries program projects to be implemented, a research report and scientific recommendation on catch limits for 22 fisheries sectors, and as well as two feasibility reports on two potential new fisheries approved, as well as an ecological risk management. I think the rest, honorable members can look at, but those are the two of the ones. As the volumes, this is the summary of the budget for this year. The total to be appropriated is 4,007.19 million. So that's basically what the budget and the our strategic plan is for me. Thank you very much. My apologies for overstaying my welcome presentation.
In our last session, we had to chase the media away. I'm sure it has since been understood as to why we had to do that. The Office of the Auditor General had to brief the committee on the work that they are currently doing in preparation for sessions of this nature. And also part of that preparation or other briefing also has to include part of the work that they are currently engaged in terms of their own audit of the entity. So under normal circumstances, you do not have anybody publishing in public any audit work in progress. So I thought, let me just rehash that matter so that it gets laid to rest. The reason why I'm mentioning all of that is because the media has been following it up, challenging Parliament in so far as one clause in the Constitution about meetings of the committees of Parliament and it to be opened. That is the background. I thought, let me just say, I am not opening up for any discussion. The matter has been laid to rest, but I thought, let me just indicate to the media people who might be here that that was the background. Unfortunately, you know, there has been all sorts of understandings and misunderstandings by the media, of course. Something to the effect that we wanted to hide something, we wanted to treat, you know, the executive with kids' gloves, things that were not related at all. So I thought, let me just mention that part as we move forward. Members, that is a long and short of a presentation by the DG. And of course, a number of issues have been raised. We are free to engage with the presentation, even on areas which have not been highlighted or tabled by the DG. In other words, members shall have had lots and lots of reading of both, you know, last year's annual report. So it's a continuation. And also you have what is called, but something to the effect of the minister's contract with the president, with all those deliverables over the period. You also have here the privy that we had by the Office of the Auditor General on the current status of both the department and also entities themselves. So that was the kind of reading that was to inform us about what we have just received. One of the other issues raised by the Office of the Auditor General, I see here the DG speaks about, you know, improving, you know, unqualified reports and provide, you know, audited financial statements, but nothing being said about performance audit, because this is one area that we picked up in our last session, that yes, the department might have used almost 99.3% of its funding. As to whether that correlates with the performance and the change in the people's lives, it remains a big question for us. Ours is that of having to do an oversight to whether at the end of the day our people's lives are getting changed for the better. No less. So that's the interest. I thought, let me just, you know, as we begin our engagement, members, the floor is open. That's from Mr. Abram, Dr. Bosman,
thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, I agree. This is a very, very lengthy presentation. And the documents that you've referred to, I want to confess and plead guilty. I couldn't read all of them. There were a plethora of them. Chairperson, my first remark would be that the strategic plan basically is trying to map out intentions. Now, I always say, sir, and I want to repeat it again, you are not judged by what you say you are going to do, but by what you have achieved already. And unfortunately, in the absence of a report where we are told about what the 2010-2011 year had achieved, it is very difficult to judge. But be that as it may, Chairperson, one does have a understanding of what goes on, and I will try and ask questions based on that. Firstly, Chairperson, the DG, I want to wish him well. I like his passion. I like his boomer. But I'm very, very worried as to the possibility of achieving everything that he has said, because it's a very tall order, Chairperson. You know, I want to remind everybody here that I have listened here in the past. For example, I think about 3 years ago, when agriculture and land affairs were one department, and I think there are still some faces that I see here that were present at that time. When we were told that in 2 years, we are going to establish 10,000 new farmers on 5 million hectares of land. And Chairperson, I quickly took out the Japanese brain and I worked out. He told me that if they had to start the next day, and they will have to resettle 13.9 farmers per day in order to achieve that target. Of course, Chairperson, hindsight I can tell you, precious little came of it. So I'm very wary when it comes to putting on figures. And this is what we want to do in this particular financial year. And to establish new farmers, 50,000 of them in this new financial year, Chairperson, I want to say here and now, it's a formidable challenge. The department is sitting with massive vacancy rates. And it is sitting with vacancy rates, Chairperson, of people that are highly qualified that you require. And without that, Chairperson, you are not going to achieve these numbers. I just want to warn you. I may be seen as somebody that's negative, but I am not. I speak from past experience. Chairperson, amongst the challenges that the DG has mentioned is the fact that there are poorly skilled smallholder farmers, inadequate support for smallholder farmers, lack of support to establish commodity groups, etc., etc. What I would like to ask is, to what extent has the department made use of existing expertise within organized agriculture to achieve this type of goal? What I'm asking is it necessary to go and establish new commodity groups when there are existing ones who have a track record and they are well functioning? And then, Chairperson, the Marketing of Agricultural Products Act, the DG has mentioned that this is going to be amended. If he could perhaps just give us a sense of the sort of amendments that are being planned. Then, Chairperson, there are questions here with regard to those vacancies. The department has more than 700 vacancies, more than 60%, Chairperson, of which are in the highly skilled production and supervisory roles. Example, directors and chief directors, due to restructuring and the moratorium placed on filling vacancies. In the 2011 State of the Nation address, the President emphasized that all funded posts should be filled. The department should tell us, what is the impact of the vacancies on its mandatory functions? And they should give us time frames for the filling of the positions and present to the committee its recruitment plan. Then, Chairperson, the department is talking about compulsory community services for veterinarians. We would like to know and have details as to how this will work. And if it wants to, if it plans to strengthen border inspections, I take it, Chairperson, it is to ensure food safety and to mitigate or control transmission and the spread of diseases. For example, the current pandemic in northern KZN, foot and mouth. The department must give us details on current activities for addressing the foot and mouth outbreak and whether there is enough budget to address and prevent future outbreaks of foot and mouth and other diseases which are of economic significance, including those associated with imported products. And my final question for this round, Chairperson, would be that there has been talk over the last 2 years about one-stop shop. But not only over the last 2 years, DG, I've heard this even in the previous ministry, about a one-stop shop, everything under one roof. Chairperson, I don't know whether we've got enough timber and enough zinc to put on that one-stop roof. I don't know. But we are just talking about these things, Chairperson. It does not happen. And I'm afraid that we will be going down again as merely having spoken about things that we plan to do and a significant number of things to be done by the end of this financial year. And I'm afraid, Chairperson, I'm not a prophet, although my name is Abram. I believe, Chairperson, it is going to be very, very difficult to meet it. And on the other hand, the worst thing we can do, Chair, is to create expectations. And if you don't satisfy those expectations, that is where the trouble kicks in. And we need to be careful. And, Chair, all these objectives, I will later give a number of examples, are not aligned, Chairperson. There are objectives, but unfortunately the outcome indicators are not really aligned. And that's a great problem that we have, that we have objectives with various programs, but the outcomes are not aligned to those objectives. For example, Chair, I don't know what has forestry and the promotion of forestry to do with food production. Forestry does not produce food. So it's not aligned, Chair, and one needs to look at the integrity of the sort of documents that come before us. And what we say there must be stuff that we really mean to do. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Abrams. Dr. Bosman shall be followed by Jutoy, then by Mrs. Pilus Maswane, then by Mama Nyalungu, followed by Nkosi Sebekulu, then Mama Tala and Mama Mkiza.
Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity also to make an input on this very important document. I think the agricultural sector's strategic plan obviously must be one that gives a direction to the industry to take it forward. And I think we've heard a very extensive explanation of all the actions that are going to take place in the future. I would actually like to also then start with maybe the government's priority and the cabinet, the Khotla's outcomes. Just to remind us that one or two or three of the issues that is important, is employment creation, the vibrant, equitable and sustainable rural communities, which will obviously only stem from a viable and a profitable sector. And I would like to start there, Chair, because if I look at this whole report, then I must really see red lights flickering for us as far as the profitability of the sector is concerned. In the front pages of this document, there is quite a number and quite a huge lot of information, obviously maybe gathered from or obtained from Stats South Africa, because they produce the stats, which indicates to me, contrary to what is said on page 40 on the challenges for the sector, that the profitability has increased. The profitability has increased. Chair, I differ completely with it. If you look at the figures, we see that the profitability of the sector has decreased quite considerably over the last two seasons. You can just look at the cash flow for farmers to get the net result of it. Since 2008-2009, a steady decrease, and I would like to say that in 2010-11 you'll see a further decrease. The reason for it is that the cost of production has gone up and the prices of commodities have gone down. And I mean, anybody that knows economics will tell you that if that is the case, then you are really heading for trouble. Now, this document only contains information on three commodities, that's the field crops, the horticulture, and animal products. If I can add one other product to it, and that is the grape industry. The grape industry has been in dire need for the last 6 years, Chair. They've seen wine prices, for instance, rising by only 40%, while the cost of the production of that specific sector has increased by about three times that amount. Just to give you an indication, a bottle of wine, the farmer only receives about less than 2 rand per bottle. And the excise duty on that is 2 rand 14. It's quite interesting that, you know, even if you go to a restaurant and the waiter opens your bottle, the tip that you normally give to that waiter is more than what the farmer gets for his production process of that wine. So I've got the information here. If the department would like to have a look at it, I can also speak to Vinpro, just to give you another example. So what I'm trying to say, Chair, the the objectives and the government's goals with the agricultural sector. And looking further in this whole document, the emphasis is on transformation. But you cannot successfully transform the sector if the basics is not right. And that is the point I want to make. If we do not attend and give attention to what causes the profitability problem in the sector, then obviously anything that stems from that will suffer from it. The first challenge in the sector, as it was put in this document, is that there is a concentration of activities in the sector. In other words, what it means, there's an economy of scale dictating in the sector. The small guy cannot survive anymore. And that is the reason why they are forced out of the sector. This is the observation that is put in this document. And nowhere in this document I see any reference to rectify this problem. So what I'm trying to say, Chair, we will have to holistically maybe look at much more detail and give much more attention to what is the causes of the rising cost in the sector. What is the causes of the prices being decreased? And just as a matter of fact, the cost of food, the increase in agricultural sector was the lowest of all the sectors over the last year. I think the inflation rate for food products was only between 2-3%. So it means that the rise in cost for the consumer is very, very small in comparison to other sectors of the economy. And I think that is a very good sign for the consumers. But unfortunately, there's other factors that are going to, in the long run, play negatively on the outcomes. Now, I would go to some of the other things, and I don't want to now raise all the worries that I have. But I think Honorable Aron has pointed out that the emerging sector must be supported, and I agree with it. And I think all the issues and the training models and which is addressed in this document has merit. One of the issues that I'm worrying about is the colleges. I see that they would like to transform or I don't know if it's just the renaming of it, but the colleges has been neglected over the last couple of years, maybe the last 5 to 10 years. They've really, and my experience of it is that the outputs of the colleges have dropped tremendously. Now, that is where the people, the farmers of the future, are trained. And if we do not maintain the standards of the colleges, we are going to suffer in the long run. Whether a change in name is the only solution to it, I doubt it. I think they must be given much more attention to really look at what is the training models of it. Obviously, I think there are quite a number of other issues that can be addressed, but I think I would like to maybe at this stage just stop with it because otherwise we're going to take too much time. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Dutton, you're covered?
Almost.
Okay.
Yes, the first thing that comes to mind for me is that I see that the Minister's Performance Agreement that she signed with the President has been incorporated into some of the strategic outcomes, which is not natural, but I think after 2 years, when I've studied that document, I've seen that already there's been some failures, and I'm afraid to say that I don't think the Minister will be able to live up to those agreements, but it's not maybe her fault, it's just that we're in a situation here with agriculture, and I'll get to that now, that in actual fact, there's a disaster looming. With this strategic plan, as Honorable Salam Abram said, indeed, it's a wish list of targets. It's my wording for it. Now, there's nothing wrong with having targets, but you have to look at where, when, how, with what are we going to achieve this. And I see here in the conclusion it says that, strategy will be cascaded down to operations for implementation. Operations plans will be developed, will be steps to be undertaken. Now,
we've got to know when, where, and how. Where's the finances? Where's the manpower? Where's all this? This is nice theoretical textbook class type of top-end strategy, and then going into some detail like we have here. But let's just kind of pick off where my colleague has stepped in a little bit. If you look at the page number 8 on this this document, there is the producer price for agricultural products. Now, from a see this from a cash flow and from an economic point of view, the producer price for agricultural products, if you look at those percentages, 14, 26, 23, 17, 7, 7, and there's a rose at the bottom, but the rest all dropped. Producer prices for agriculture, it all dropped. A couple of pages on slide 11, there's the gross value of agricultural production. It's steadily growing, but it's not really keeping up with the growth in the country, you know. Then the number 12 is a shocker. If you look at the farm sector income, you look at the products increased in one by 3%, the other one 5%. Okay, then if you look at the next one, number 13, the farm sector income, cash flow of farmers. Now, number 14 tells you that the cash flows of farmers, it decreased by 13%. Now, economically speaking, if any business takes that knock, you've got to get the money from somewhere. And you'll see where they got it, you know. Now, cash flow of farmers, and the next one, 15, there it drops again. The cash flow is going down. Cash is like blood in your body. You know, if that starts, you're going to suffer from blood pressure. You know, you can't sustain it. Without cash flow, there's no nothing. Production costs. There it is the figures. Now look at investment. Now okay, we'll see later on that the debt is growing. That's where they're financing their cash flow with debt. Okay, that's an old classical way to do it. The state does it, everybody does it. Private households does it. But the investment, it's not the debt, it's not employed in investment. Now, if you look at number 18, you will see that the gross investment in respect of fixed improvements for the year ended 2010, 30 June, increased by 1%. Now, please, gentlemen, I mean, if anybody invests in a business, in any nationwide business, it's 1%. The red lights are flickering. You know, it's like glaring into your face. Then, if you look at investment there, and exactly on the next one page, slide number 19, there is a downturn. It shows exactly it went up and then suddenly went down. Of course, it's the recession maybe, but maybe it's all the other things around the agriculture that's becoming uncertain to investors. Now, look at the other one, 20. Farming debt. The total farming debt was estimated so much, and it was an increase in 16%. Now, your cash flow is down, everything is down, but your debt increased by 16%. I don't know. Then it shows on the chart. And now, consumer prices. But now, on the one hand, the people are already crunching, especially the poorer households. They are especially vulnerable to increasing prices. And here we have 5%, 2%, 2%, 1.9%, 2%, 6%. I don't know if this is correct, but because yesterday I was shocked to see that I can buy chops for 99 rand in a supermarket. You know, a lamb. I mean, I was just waiting for it under there. Yeah. So, consumption on excellent food. Now, consumer prices is steadily rising, but on the same time, cash flow of farmers are going down. The debt is rising. The consumer price is rising. But the cash flow and investment is going down. So we're getting this. This is increasing. It's opening up. Imports and exports. Okay, that one speaks for itself. According to this, the export values there, harmony was down. So you can go on. So really, there is another slide in page 32 where you can see the contribution to the GDP, where this is steadily going down, steadily going down. There's no way that we can recover from that. Now take this into what I've already mentioned, and you can immediately see that this is a downward thing. We are heading for disaster. We've got now, okay, we can dabble in agrarian reform, and of course we must have it somehow, you know, we must go that way. We should do it in a sensible way, and we must do it clever, and we must have the finances for it, and we must do it on the right spot, on the right time, with the right people, and it's going to take time. That's what I'm telling you. It's going to take time, but we've got to keep the farmers on the land. We've got to keep them profitable. Now, what I say about this strategy now, we're talking about strategy, is that we're looking at a wish list of targets that we want to reach, and it's commendable that everybody wants to do their bit. But unfortunately, the thing is that our strategy should be aligned for the next few years. Absolutely, we must look at the problem first, identify the critical factors, and then zoom in on that and build a strategy around that. Now, if you look at this investment situation, if you look at the debt situation, if you look at the cash flow situation and the pricing, this is where our attention should focus. If this is a private sector thing, take their hand and see what we can do. Otherwise, the private sector is going to be in a shrinking silo, and we as a public sector are going into a rising silo, and the twine will never meet. So, ladies and gentlemen, I don't want to be swatgallig. That's a nice word. I don't know what it is in English, but I'll tell you that there's disaster looming. I don't want to be a prophet of doom. But sooner or later, the prices of food and the production and profitability, those things are going to merge, and we're going to have riots. So I'm telling you, gentlemen, you must take this seriously. We've got to look at another strategy. We can't go on like this. This strategy will take us onto the theoretical and the wish list and the nice things, but it's not going to solve the problems of this country. Thank you.
You don't trust that you're not going to be leading that riot. Members, we have Mamapirus Masane.
Yes, thank you. And thank you, CG and department. Chairperson, when you check the overview, my serious concern, Chairperson, is about the decrease in agricultural production. For products. This increase is worrying, Chairperson, because when we talk about food security and you look the overview here, you are not even sure as whether what we are talking about really it will work or it won't work. And again, on page 8, ten years, poultry meat industry made the largest contribution with 18.2%. Chairperson, with poultry meat, this can be doubled if really you were serious about not inputting a poultry meat. This can be doubled if we can put our energy together and our mind together and work on this on the poultry meat. 18% can easily be doubled. And Chairperson, again on my colleague have already said that, but still, I will talk about it. Agricultural colleges. I don't know and understand why at the first phase, these colleges were neglected, whatever. Because if really we are serious about farming, we cannot neglect these colleges. We need skills. We need to train people. We need to train youth. We need to train women. We need to train everybody who is interested in farming. I will be very happy. I don't know this transforming of these colleges, what do they mean? I thought they would say we are taking care of these agricultural colleges to do the work which was supposed to be done by these colleges, agricultural colleges. And again, Chairperson, I'm not sure, did you, all this program and the budget, I'm not sure as whether this budget is enough for this program. Because what I know is that agriculture budget has never been enough. But what I want to say is the little money we have, if we can use it properly and following our objectives, they are aligned with our targets, we can move somewhere, we can reach somewhere. But what is worrying is that you will find that the objectives, they don't align with the targets. Objectives, they are putting another story, targets are another story. We have seen the Auditor General report. Most programs were not aligned with the targets. That is a worrying factor also, Chairperson. I know that we are not near a Maputo declaration, 10% of agriculture. I know that we are not near, but we should struggle, to push at least every year. There must be increment, DG, of the department, especially the Department on Agriculture and Forestry Fisheries. There must be increment. Because if we can work on this little money, we can have this a good and nice looking program. But if we don't have enough budget for this, it will just be, it's like we are dreaming or we are telling a story which will never end. That is my contribution, Chairperson, and I will come back later.
Yes, ma'am. Salama mu nyalungu. Mbakwa kwasi sibenu nkosi kwebe kuru. Bombe.
Thank you, Chairperson. My colleagues have said the mouthful, but I have the DG on his conclusion talking about the tractors. I just want to check the DG. Which provinces are you allocated these tractors and how many of them? And who are the beneficiaries of those tractors? And I just want to check, are these tractors really monitored? And then my second question is, the DG talked about the department, the 1 million savings from training and development given its skills and capacity challenges. And the 11.2 million saving from agency, which I just want to check here. Which agency are you talking about here? And then my last question is, one of the government initiatives for 2011-2012 is to create a post bank in the rural areas. As we saw, one of those the time where the oversight in Gian Moyesha area. I just want to check, is there a plan to utilize this for the disbursement of Mafisa funds? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, ma'am. So, tell him goes. Open up, Bush.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think my colleague has touched on what I had in mind, the issue of the tractors. As the DG was presenting, he mentioned the fact that as a department, they'll be following up on those tractors, yes. But my question out of that was, is it a proper style of management to say we put forward a program without having a proper plan for managing it? This question arises from the fact that, Chairperson, as my colleague has just mentioned, the issue of tractors. In some areas where these tractors were delivered, you find that they are just standing in the yard. They are not doing what they are expected to do in helping the communities out there. There's no proper way of monitoring the operators, if one may say. Really, my question was solely based on the fact, Chairperson. And again, in the presentation, the DG mentioned about the training of 15,000 new producers. And if I had him well, and my question on that one would be, is that training that he refers to is going to be offered to the students or partners to the students who would be trained to be part of new producers in agriculture or in production in our country? Or you're just talking about maybe those people who are in the field who need to be maybe more empowered in dealing with production. Lastly, Chairperson, this is a comment actually which needs maybe to be looked into in some way. We are talking about emerging farmers, and commercial farmers. Very little has been mentioned about the communal farmers and communal land, where we have a vast land that is arable, which is not used. What strategies does the department have to make use of that land in order to produce for those subsistence farmers, in order for them as well to, if they produce well, we might find ourselves maybe fighting this price hike in production. I think that would be my contribution to the presentation, Chairperson. Thank you.
Mama Tala and Sultanao Mama, in case. Covered. Mama Tala.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is on the is based on the fact that on the about 2 weeks ago we had an oversight where we visited the fisheries protection vessels, and then what we found out there was that there is underfunding and understaffing within the fisheries division. I would like to know how does the department intend, how is the department going to address the challenges that we discovered there? And also, the department should also provide details on the working of fisheries program and its budget. The other question is on the fish farm, where the department indicates that it plans to establish 12 fish farms per, that is 3 per year over the net, over the MTF period. The department, I would like the department to give an explanation on the rationale behind the decision to establish 3 farms per year and provide details on the locations and farm owners of the planned 3 farms for the current financial year, as well as the species that will be farmed. Thank you.
If I would just, I hope there's not going to be any revision or clarification on the challenges in the sector. A point gets to be made about the high input costs. And naturally this affects, I'm sure here Mr. Dutoy, I would be, you know, just for once, you know, be, or you would be agreeing with me on this one, that, you know, one of the major challenges that your commercial farmer is confronted with gets to be this very factor. The input costs, your administered prices, and yet these are people who are supposed to be competing with your typical farmer in Europe and also in Asia, wherein there's huge subsidies and tariffs, especially in your, you know, Brazilian situation in other countries. We, if you are to be exporting, you know, you are going to be confronted with a serious challenge of tariffs that literally gets raised. But in our country, I'm not too sure as to whether we have taken any discussion. I know typically this is the matter that would reside within trading industry, especially in your negotiations in your WTO session. But you certainly have to have a role as a culture that you might be to play in contributing to that discussion that talks about a need for subsidies that are indirect, of course. Whether you're talking here about diesel, you're talking about fertilizers, you know, your energy, renewable energy sources as we speak going towards, you know, this UN climate change summit. We are equally expected as a country to demonstrate in action, you know, programs, not plans, but programs that are there, so that you are able to say, you know, especially in your farming community, talking and addressing the administered prices. I mean, the prices of electricity these days, they literally, you know, skyrocket. And that affects directly anybody who is in that serious business that has everything and anything to do with your food production and food security in our country. Now, one other interest that I had on the same area on challenges, here you have the misalignment or malalignment between agriculture, R&D, and practical implementation, which implies that research has little impact. We've also invited, especially on the training side of things, granted here you're talking about R&D, AgriCita. And I've also heard mention being made about training that is taking place within the department. Of course, it might be a dedicated training towards staff But I would imagine AgriCeta would also be having its own focal areas. You also have your research capacity within the department. ARC and other institutions, especially in the higher learning areas, that get to be involved in the same subject area. And then, of course, we trust that when ARC presents, and we certainly are going to hear a lot more. I'm sure DG, you will be listening, and of course, these are things that you are familiar with. But it would be very important that, you know, when ARC engages with its own report, we're equally able to get one composite response, set of responses from among yourselves as well, yourself, the DG being included. For now, that would be it.
Thank you, Chair. I think maybe to start off with the question from Honorable Abraham. Just on the target is for 50,000 smallholders over 5 years, not for this year, it's over 5 years. And then we think that the problem that we've been having, we've not been properly evaluating our systems. We work with smallholder farmers all the time. They benefit from CAST, they benefit from AFISA, but we've not audited to what the, how many are we taking a year, etc., etc. I mean, if there's all for that information, we will make it happen. But we do think that 10,000 may appear to be big, that's for the, an annual target. It may not be, maybe we're already reaching half of that through the, because the information we got, as we have sent the team to look at on the ground, what's happening, we're actually finding out that there are many people being reached by our program that we are counting them. So if they appear to be a big target, it may not be such a big target. Now, again, Honorable Abraham asked about why are we not testing existing expertise. I don't think we're necessarily opposed to working with existing expertise. But we do have to find, to help those who are still, who have not found their feet, who are still trying to find their first steps, to find those steps. Okay? So, when we're saying that we want to focus on smallholder farmers, we are trying to help them find their feet as government. For instance, if one were to use the example of NERPO, okay? the Association of Smallholder Farmers in the meeting up, there exists, they're a dynamic group, okay? They're powerful, but they work together with the commercial fair. There's no competition between them finding their feet and at the same time working with the speaker. So, what we do, we have got to find a way of helping smallholder farmers to find their feet. On the issue of comparable community service, Dr. Mukhadara will say a thing or two about that. And just to say one thing on the one-stop shop. I said earlier that we are these days following up the money that we're dishing out. Okay? And one of the things that we've been working on has been to ensure that there's a common plan, okay, between national government and provincial government. So that if we're saying that we're supporting this number of farmers in the case, we both know who they are. We've already done the initial plan, what is possible for them, issues of market access, etc., etc. That involves lots of planning. And at least one thing we've been working on this year, what we refer to as special planning, has been yet to achieve just that. And we have already got the number of provinces, we've got emerging plans with those provinces that we will be able to concretize and operationalize. So it's work that we're doing. It's not something that's in IKF. It's concrete work that we've been doing working closer with his provinces. It relates to the first thing that, it's just the point I made, that we are following up the money. We are saying that if we are putting money on something, we are sending our own people on the ground to ensure that they work with those provinces. So in the past, we used to send money to the provinces and hope and pray that that money would be used for what we want it to be used for. We are no longer doing that. Okay? If we are putting money, whether it's 100 million to KZN, we work with KZN to determine where that money is going to go, to who is going to go, and what support those people are going to get for that money. That's why I was saying earlier that I'm anticipating a number of divorces from the department, because a number of our colleagues are spending time far from their families doing this kind of way, because they have to follow the money. Dr. Mkhota, you may come in later. That's not the issue. Come in later. Let's jump to the initial take. On the issue of the profitability of the sector, I think this is the point that Honorable Postman and Honorable Pitoy made. Maybe the question is, on emphasis, not necessarily on omission, necessarily on omission. I agree with both of you that there is no way that we will support South African agriculture and only work on one foot, which is smallholder agriculture. Smallholder agriculture presently contributes almost nothing to the GDP of agriculture. We are completely aware of that. But it's something we have to change. Okay? Not because, and for one reason, that we're actually forced to do it. And there are millions of people in the former homeland. And when we talk about smallholder agriculture, honorable Tebekul, I'm also talking about the people mentioning. It's not land reform beneficiaries. Those of you. The millions and hundreds of thousands of people that we're talking about are in the former homeland. They do have access to the asset called land. It may not be classical ownership, but they have got access to it. These are the people we're talking about. So when I mention smallholder, you must say ex-homeland, in your mind. That's what I'm talking about. We're compelled to make sure that these people work. We have no choice, actually. Well, there are no jobs. The commercial sector, South African capitalism is not creating jobs. Let's look at the facts now. We've been hoping, pumping for 15 years, jobs. They're not coming. And maybe so in the South African thing is a global thing. The issue is, what other lever do we have to create economic capabilities for people? And agriculture is one of the easiest ones, if you ask me. So that's why we're focusing on it. Okay? Now, but we're fully aware that we cannot walk on one leg. Okay? What we're doing for commercial agriculture, firstly, presently, we're trying to designate people who are going to link up with all these commodity groups, okay, in the department. That's one thing. So that whether it's the people in wine, they know who their person is in the department. Okay? And then we're also developing in the department policy monitoring and evaluation system. Okay? So there will be people who will be looking at working with the sector to develop strategies to keep commercial agriculture afloat. Okay? We're aware of that. The third thing around it is the issue what the chairperson refers to as these cost drivers, structural problems in agriculture. It's something that has been raised with us. It has been raised with the president, and the president gave us some work to do around this. We have worked, we've stepped out issues around agro-logistics that have to be addressed, the issue of input costs that have to be addressed. There is a comprehensive plan, and working with the Competition Commission to look at what is it that is making South African agriculture not as profitable or as competitive as it's supposed to be. So there is combined work that is taking place around that. So we're fully aware, and we meet also the CEO Forum. We will meet with all leaders of agriculture to look at what are the challenges. So we are very clear that we cannot walk on one foot, which is smallholder agriculture, and leave the one foot that is alive and kicking and not preventing it. The only thing we'll raise, of course, will be issues of equity. Okay? We will not only just support commercial agriculture without asking questions of equity. We've got to ask those questions. Okay? But maybe in the presentation, and I maybe I take that point, that is a valid criticism, we do not spend much time to explore and to share what it is that we're doing with commercial agriculture. It can be, of course, improved. That I agree. We can improve it more. We can structure and institutionalize it more. But it's an area of work that we I'm fully aware that we've got to address the structural constraints to protect and defend the commercial agriculture if we're to be able to ensure food security in the country. But small border, we must also focus on that. Then there was another question again, Mr. Mugaza, please note this one, which was on the colleges. Please comment on that one. I think I take the point that Mama Sol was raising, that if we were to strengthen our poultry industry, would need to be imported in much more trade as we're doing. There was a question again about agricultural colleges. One were they? It was the first place. I would again invite Mr. Mugaza to comment on that. Then there was the issue of the budget, whether is our budget enough or not, and the Maputo Declaration. I think actually I want to have a discussion with the Maputo Declaration and what it means for South Africa. Because we may be emphasizing a point that is not really worth being overemphasized as we're doing it. If you look at South Africa and Africa, right now let's look at rural development. Rural development has got a budget of about 6 billion, and the bulk of it is for capital spending. It's not for salaries. They are a very small department. Okay? That's 6 billion. That is supposed to deal with all issues related to rural development, agriculture, creation of rivers, all of those things. Okay? It's supposed to work with the vitalization of the teaching scheme, etc. We are working with them around that. Okay? Secondly, we've got our own budget. Every year, South Africa puts in, just for smallholder farmers, about 1 billion rand every year to support smallholder farmers. Now, the difference between us and the countries that adopted the Maputo Declaration, the majority of the countries that adopted the Maputo Declaration, that their economies are 70% agriculture. We are not. Okay? Their GDPs are 70% agriculture. Ours is not. Agriculture is about 3-4% of their GDP. So if you look at the amount of money we're putting to smallholder agriculture, and again, our commercial agriculture doesn't need the Maputo Declaration. I'm sorry. If it is a repeat of it, our commercial agriculture can find it, it can manage itself. Okay? So with that, it's a question of picking and ticking here and there, look at a few things. But overall, they've got their feet, they are properly managed, they've got access to banks, they've got everything that they need to survive. So when we talk about Maputo Declaration, it is for us relevant to smallholder farmers. Okay? And from that point of view, I'm asking whether a billion rand that is there to cast every year, and Mafisa with another 400 million, and the kind of money that is there from rural development and for public works, example of those that do it, whether does it approximate some measures of political declaration? I'm leaving up for experts to answer this question. I'm not but I think we'll organize a colloquium on this. What does Maputo Declaration mean for us? Because we will forever be defending, and look, there's nothing wrong with doing. Is that the unit of analysis is different from South Africa and the rest of the South African countries. I think I've answered the issue of the tractor. We have sent letters, Mam Nyalunga, we supported the provision of letters for Malanga and for KwaZulu-Natal. Okay? Those are the provinces that have secured tractors. I think that with the KZN, they were more advanced in their system. Also because they put a lot of money for their tractors. KZN has spent, we only give about 50 million per province to secure tractors. KZN has almost a billion rand, a lot of money on mechanization. They've invested real lots of money. So they've got a partner system of managing them. I think where we've had a challenge is in Mpumalanga, okay? Where I think that we are now saying that we should not remember the relationship between national and government is a sensitive one. You don't want to come to be a dictating. Yeah. Also, because the tiger was not supposed to be owned by us. You were just facilitating, giving the money to buy tractors, reinforcing an allocation for tractors. So the other big deal was supposed to work out by them. But we think that there are challenges. and were presently, because there were DTCs that were responsible for all these other provinces, were saying that they must now follow up also. The guys were supposed to respond from Mpumalanga must ensure that they are proper system around Mpumalanga, and so even as well as for everything. We are hoping to put in or to supply 3 other provinces this year, and then we'll continue doing the rest in the following year. So, yeah, that's what we are about. I think I've answered Honorable Temukur. And then Mamutwana. I think the issue, the detail of what the plans are on fish farms, etc. Mr. Smula is here, he's acting the DJ, he will comment on it. I think there is a challenge of underfunding in fisheries. I'm aware of some of those challenges. And I think it's a question of us having raised them with the treasure. There's not much you can do. We just need to tell treasure that there's lots of money, but also you get security of the seas, etc. There's a lot of money that needs to be done, to put aside for that. I think the first thing I answered the question on high input costs and what work. I think that work, there's work that's taking place, but it needs to be better coordinated. In the past, you didn't have this policy unit to focus on this policy question. We now have it, and therefore I think it will be there who will lead the discussion, who will manage the relationship with the competition commission, who will look at the work that we've already done in the department on how to address the concerns of commercial access. But we are aware, commercial access raised these issues. We work at the document and the response. So is that the issues that were raised by commercial access came from the president, and we're still waiting for the president to reconvene us. But we said that will take some time. We are going to implement our own recommendation on commercial access, which we've already worked on. Around all of this, we have logistics, cost drivers, we have work has been done on this. We'll work on that. So, to conclude from my side on this round, that we are fully aware of the concerns that are raised by the particularly Honorable Pretoria and Honorable Fossman, and we are aware of that, and we are elected. We are clear on those concerns. Colleagues, can you comment on the questions? Mr. Smula?
On the issue of the protection vessels, I think the DG has indicated that indeed we are looking at that situation. Since this function has now come to the department, we have realized that indeed there are challenges with respect to staffing and our ability to maintain the patrols and surveillance. So as you know, that currently the department is finalizing the issues of appointing staff, and I think some of those elements will be looked at actually in that context. But broadly, the issues of funding the vessel is a challenge, and I think we need to look at it more broader than what we have. And the other issue that was raised, I think, relates to the current fisheries program and that we have. What are the details there, the budgeting? We do have a list of all the projects that we're going to be implementing, and we can make the list available so that people can be aware of what each of those projects is about and which species are going to be covered under each one of those. And, of course, also the location of where these projects will be. We have all those done. In fact, the business plans are all completed, and we're about to roll in the next coming financial year. On the fish farms, we have indicated that we intend to have 12, but dealing with three in the next coming financial year. The rationale there is that we intend to have a feasibility study because we need to be able to be well informed about the viability, a whole range of logistics around a viable fishing farm. And I think given what we have, the information that we have collected so far, the indication is that at least three will be achievable in the next coming financial year, and we should be able in the actually outer years be able to look at another three and then moving on. And within that framework, we are also intending to use these fish farms to expand fishing in all the four coastal the provinces. So by the end of the midterm, we should have been able to cover the four, meaning that in addition to the Western Cape, we should have gone through to Northern Cape as well as the Eastern Cape and KZN. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. I want to agree with the DG when they mentioned the KZN about the tractors, because I saw those tractors in Umsinga and in Vryheid. But what a wrong thing that they did about this tractor. They did not monitor that tractor, because if Umkhize noMajola abazwani, if the tractor is under Majola, Umkhize, they did not get the success to being cultivated their land because abazwani noMajola, come the chair. That is the wrong thing that the government did about this tractor. But in Umkhize, there is a tractor, Vryheid, there is a tractor by the Department of Agriculture. KZN, that the time they give the people that tractor, they call in danger. We checked for it. That day they will come and deliver that tractor in Umtina and Vryheid. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. I think Mama Mkhize, the very important point I raise equally. The department gets to disperse a budget for provinces, but the monitoring mechanisms remain a challenge. For instance, among others, you are going to have a budget of R1 billion this time around on CASP. Now, when we have to get a feedback on usage of such, we are told that it's provinces that manage such budgets. Similarly, your extension office, same response that you get. It does bring a challenge because, I mean, your extension office literally gets to find itself in a situation where, you know, people literally live in far away places and literally having to get in and out. Now, the national office is not hands-on in that regard. Now, that's the kind of issue that Mama is raising. Maybe let's just allow the other officials to conclude, and then we'll come for the second round, even if it means follow-up questions.
Thank you. That would be Dr. Mkhajan.
The questions were around two areas. One is on compulsory community services, and the second one was what are the current activities on FMD. How the community services program, compulsory community services program, Honorable Abrams asked as to how that will work. We have made agreement with the University of Pretoria. We've made agreement with the South African Veterinary Council. As soon as the students finalize their final year, they will then go into community services. They will get registered by the Veterinary Council after conducting community services. I think a survey which was done 2-3 years ago, it showed that about 80-90% of students, when they qualify from the Honors Board faculty, leave the country. And we take this as a short-term measure because other issues is to address the issues which are there at the Honor Support Faculty of Veterinary Science. So the Para-Veterinary Act, the Veterinary and Para-Veterinary Act is currently under review to amend to ensure that there are regulations attached to that so that no students will actually practice without having gone through the compulsory community services. We exchanged notes with the Department of Health, and we've studied what they've done, and I think that's the way forward in terms of addressing this in terms of the short-term basis. With regard to the... we take this as a 10-year program, Mr. Abrams. It's a one-year period. It's going to be a one-year period. We are having graduates, about 100 students, almost graduating every year from the University of Pretoria. With regard to SMD, I'll ask my colleague there just to reflect those two maps. Quick one, just to indicate to you, this is the Northern KwaZulu-Natal. I think through the routine surveillance, what we did was that we actually picked up some of the deep tests. I think maybe you can go to the second slide. Okay, there it is. Those red dots, in fact, shows the deep tanks which started being infected. During routine serosurveillance, some of the deep tanks, the cattle there, they seroconverted, that is, they showed antibodies in their blood of foot and mouth disease. An attempt has been made locally through the laboratory at the OVI, the ARC, Agricultural Research Council, Honor Support Veterinary Institute, to try and isolate the virus. We have not isolated the virus as yet. It could be due to various reasons. We also sent the same samples to the Pebright laboratory in the UK to confirm the diagnosis. And I think currently so far we could only, I think the second map, we could only grow the virus. And the diagnosis was done under the PCR, which is the polymerase chain reaction, in the laboratory at OVI, where only in the game reserve, at Ndumo game reserve, which is actually on top there, at the corner where you get those red dots. At the Ndumo game reserve, where we found the buffalo, which were found to be positive, and we only managed to grow the virus through the PCR. The red dots just show you the number of these tests which are actually found to be positive. The yellow dots actually shows you the number of deep tests sampled but were shown to be negative. We follow the river. I think just maybe just below that red dot there, those two dots here, there. That's where we follow the river is. It's now being used as a boundary for delineating the infected area from the non-infected area. The minister declared the area to be an infected area all around it. I think on the northwest side, we're using the R66 to be the delineating road, and on the northern side, the southern side, we're using Mfolo River as our boundary. But basically, I think we can do a proper preview when we have time, but I think basically the infection is contained there. The case which occurred in Gauteng only occurred because of... Thank you. Yes, that is on follow the river here. So all this area which is around here, the blue one, is the one which is declared as an infected area. Now, we around Freyland here, I think somewhere here, there was through several surveillance and information received from the farmers, we learned that there were some people who moved cattle from here to come to Gauteng. And I don't know how they did that, but I think they did that. And we are having a situation. They started first by moving the farms to Freyad and then from Freyad to Gauteng. And we are having a situation where the two farms in Freyad and in Gauteng are currently under quarantine. Now, all the affected animals which are coming from fire to go to Gauteng. There were 93 animals which were affected. Samples have been taken on the animals. Laboratory results have actually shown we haven't isolated the virus as yet in cattle. However, the situation is that all the animals in Gauteng, the 93, they've been slaughtered. We collected also the lymph nodes from the animals so that there is further laboratory analysis to ensure that they try to isolate the virus. I think that's the status currently. We can do thorough briefing at a later stage. Thank you.
should I invite Mr. Dredge to talk on the Agricultural Amendment Act, as well as broadly on profitability issues in commercial agriculture? If you could comment on that.
Maybe start with Mr. Mangazana, if he has gone on.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Mangazana, end of that one, then Mr. Dredge will prepare himself. And Dr. Mkhize will also follow.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG. The main question that I'll be responding to is the one around colleges of agriculture. I must state that from a framework point of view, we had already developed these norms and standards for agricultural training institutes. We had a draft norms and standards for agricultural training institutes. And these norms and standards of agricultural training institutes, they don't just talk about changing the name of the colleges. They define what should be the functions of these colleges, who should work in those particular institutions, what kind of infrastructure that need to exist in those particular institutions, and other things that we've already done. And the second thing, we used those norms and standards to do an evaluation of these colleges. There are 12 colleges that I'm talking about at this particular point in time, so that we check what is the gap between the norms and the state of affairs in a particular institution. As a result of that, Chair, when we did that kind of work, we also started to make proposal to National Treasurer at that point in time. And as a result, they gave us just a catalyst fund that to kickstart some infrastructure improvements, which is in a range of about 5 million institutions per year over a 3-year period to begin with. So there is already some attempt to say that we want to assist institutions. Much as institutions are centered around, I know you don't like that one, within the provincial departments, but we say that we are going to provide this kind of a supplementary fund in terms of infrastructure. And on top of that, the norms and standards also specify what is the role of the national department in the administration of this college. Hence, we're talking about working towards the green paper, because once we need to have to work towards a particular legislation for us to be able to enforce, to say these are the national functions, these are the provincial functions, what structures need to exist within the college, what the kind of council, what is function, and all that. Now, the issue around the state of affairs in the colleges was that what we found was that seven of the colleges, indeed, their state of affairs was neglected. They were neglected. Five were in a condition that they can actually function. The seven. Okay. The 12 colleges, if I may put this way. You've got in Limpopo, the problematic ones. You've got Solo College of Agriculture in the Eastern Cape. You've got Fort Coast College in the Eastern Cape. You've got, in KZN, you've got Owens Tole College of Agriculture. You go to Limpopo, one will talk about Tombisileka College of Agriculture, and Mazivandi College of Agriculture, and then you go to, I'm trying now to pick up in terms of these other provinces, so you caught me off a little bit, but I can give you the other, but mainly, the way this college was structured, you had...
My interest was only on those that have problems, that's the only one.
Okay. But I only gave you five so far. Okay, the other one is your Glen College in Free State. And the last one is your Taung College in Northwest. Thank you, Dr. Mbazo. So that is what that's where you see that there was a glaring neglect in terms of institution, because the infrastructure deteriorated to some point. Now, we say that this catalytic fund will at least begin to kickstart the process. But however, the other point that I want to highlight, Chair Basin, is that why we then talked about what should be the function of the colleges of agriculture. Much as institutions, some of them have been under-resourced, but some of them never moved to take advantages of the new landscape on training. For example, how much they were tapping in from the fund from the facilitators, how much they were tapping in terms of the National Skills Fund. So we say then broadening their scope and actually and forcing them to focus on vocational training rather than pure academic training, which their intention was always to say, we want to make sure that our graduates are able to proceed to university. So those are things that we are changing. The other thing that we are bringing on board, we are working with two international donors, called the Niche Project, which is Netherlands, also to assist institutions in terms of their own capacity building, in terms of improving their curriculum, as well as the German government. We are currently having specific projects that we are working. They are actually having personnel deployed in this institution to also to provide the necessary support. The other area, which also relates to training, which I just wanted to touch on, is about training of beneficiaries or producers in the provinces. What I want to say there that, one, we had a framework of how that is being done. We had what is called terms of reference for coordination of central funded training programs. We differ from October last year. We have agreed with provinces that 10% of all grant funds had to be dedicated to training, but we didn't only agree on that. We put up a professional service provider who sit down with provinces in terms of making sure that all the beneficiaries, all the projects that have been approved, there are skills audit that has been done, there is a training plan that is put on the table so that for the preceding year. And then what then that the professional training provider does also would do monitoring of the training of the programs on the ground. So that, I think that's another issue that I wanted us to highlight. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Tichy. Now, I just wanted also to do some clarification, especially on the tractors, because I saw that a number of honorable members, they just wanted to know the facts and the figures then there. Yes, there are tractors, but because they are wider than just tractors, it's also other implements which are involved in then there. That's why we call them mechanization. And also, as perhaps also DG put has mentioned, that we are also busy doing a mechanization policy in order to help us in monitoring it. But also on the figures, on the two provinces which already have the tractors, as DG said, that it's a program which is coming into phases. The Mpumalanga, which started, the 85 tractors were bought or were distributed in Mpumalanga. And they are, as also it was said, that there is also a tight relationship which is sensitive between the national and the province. Although the first of the project comes from the national, but also we cannot be on the ground. On the ground, I think it's the province. It's the provincial competence on that. The Mpumalanga tractors, they are managed by municipalities. And the training program is conducted, there was a training program which was conducted for them, for the drivers, through the program Masbuyele Masimini. And then DAF is now monitoring the progress and also the implementation of those tractors. And then in KwaZulu-Natal is a different situation altogether, as also DG has said, that KwaZulu-Natal also, they also pitched a lot of budget into it. DAF provided 85 tractors to them, but all the provinces itself, it bought 115, so there are 200 tractors. And those tractors, also through the advice of the province, they were distributed through AMAKOSI, but also in the municipal district. They also, for some reasons, they did not want them to go to municipalities, especially because also it coincided with the political season. So they wanted it to be done through AMAKOSI because the monitoring and also the way also they were going to be distributed and also to be allocated to people. As Mamu Mkize was saying, that sometime also Mkize and Dombela and whoever becomes problematic. So it's done through AMAKOSI, but also still monitored by the Department of Agriculture in the provinces, which is responsible. Is responsible for the training, is responsible also for fuel, and also for the drivers. The drivers are employed by the Department of Agriculture in the province. Although they come from the community, there are people who are selected from the community through AMAKOSI, and who go through the training, and then they are the drivers of that. And some of the fuel is still done by the province, but as after a year, it will be phased out to the communities, to be done by the communities. And then the monitoring is done by the province, but also the KwaZulu-Natal province, together with DAF, they are also implementing a program of monitoring those tractors. I think that's the situation with the tractors. And we call them also presidential mechanization program, because the president is the patron of that. And he will be the one who launches that. He has done it at Mpumalanga, he's going to be doing it in KwaZulu-Natal, and also in the other provinces when it is in functioning. Thank you.
It would have been important to get a schedule of those other planned I thought Dr. Mkize was going to respond.
Probably, Chair, as we are, because I know that the other three provinces which will be coming right now, it's going to be Eastern Cape, Free State, and I think Western, Northwest. And we will be submitting the program.
You don't know when.
We don't, because also we are still also, because also the as the national, we are also working with other partners, like with the ARC, in terms of also complementing other necessities, which are, because it's not only tractors, but also there are some other packages which goes with that, because also it moves in with the number of other things, like the revitalization of irrigation schemes, and also the other provisions which also are done also together with the Department of Land Reform on the Comprehensive Rural Development Program, CRDP.
I guess there's a last question. Respond.
There was also a question on forest and food. I thought you could take it to the Rambit. And then the last question, sorry, the very last one will be on Agricultural Amendment Act. I'm not sure that has been answered. Mr. Malaj will talk to it. And I thought also Mr. Dresch could talk about the profitability in the sector, in the commercial sector. It is a good comment on those. Mr. Dresch and Mr. Malaj.
Thanks, DG. Thanks, Honorable Members. I'm going to be responding to the question by Honorable Abrams on the review of the Agricultural Marketing Act and the highlights that came up with it. There was a committee that was established to look at the Marketing Act, the review part of it, and the recommendations came through, the report came through. It was discussed broadly within the sector. It has even gone to the economic cluster and agreed there. The minister has approved that. It's currently in the department, as I'm sure it's in the system, to get it presented to the portfolio committee. I think the other question that the honorable member asked was just briefly on what are the highlights of the recommendations, what came out of the recommendations. There are a few things which are broadly, I can broadly talk through, but the presentation then will talk to it when the department will be presenting to the portfolio committee. One of the things that came out, which was recommended, was to adjust the mandate of the National Agricultural Marketing Council to clarify the role of the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fishery on in tariff setting, and to broaden the scope of the Act itself. And there's also an issue which needs to set procedures on the management and utilization of levies that are collected by some of the trusts. That is in the main, the highlights of some of the recommendations in the review. But then the document, as I said, is in the system. I think the department will then contract in the office of the chairperson for a date to come and present the document to the portfolio committee.
Thanks. Mr. Abram, if you just check on your system, you'll find the document.
Chief, I could just make some comments around the profitability of the sector. I'd like to confirm the remarks that have been made based on the information in the strategic plan. We all know the investment in the sector is down, the debt is up, cash flow problems, pricing problems, and in the past 2 years we've had a problem with input costs which are rising at a very dramatic rate, and commodity prices which are also down as a result of the recession, but during this year commodity prices are recovering. But for the profitability of the sector to improve, there's got to be investment in the sector. That's just in brief, Chair. Thank you.
Just to repeat, that we are working with commercial agriculture. We are working with the Competition Commission. We are working with the NAMC to attend to this question of profitability of the sector. So it's work in progress. And maybe at some point we might even come and report here on what is that we've done around this particular question. Then, Dr. Rambit here.
Thank you, DG. Chairperson, good morning, honorable members. The question coming from Honorable Abrams regarding the alignment, as it was observed by the Auditor General, the view of the department is that forestry does contribute to food security. It is not a direct contribution. It is, however, related to the fact that the forestry is a rural activity. It creates job opportunities in the rural areas, thereby making sure that people who reside in rural areas can afford food. That is the interpretation of the department. It more has to do with affordability and access to food. It's not as direct as in terms of production of food. That is how
the department saw the contribution of forestry and natural resource management to food security. Thank you, DG and Chairperson.
You are correct to say that some members who live in the rural areas. Members, we have those few responses. We give this much time to the department precisely because of its importance and the work that it does. I'm not going to elaborate as to what kind of work. Safe to mention that here we are about ensuring that there are proper plans in place to ensure food security so that we are able to live, as one of these philosophers shall have said, you know, before men must engage in politics, men must eat. Now, that's what we are about. Without that food, we'll all die and we'll not engage Mr. Detroit in politics. Yeah, no, you know, you like Karl Marx. Anyway, now we are told that there is tea and whatnot outside. Allow us to continue, members, at this pace. We shall go on again on another round of questions. And I must also mention that we'll have to be here for a longer time. Can we take a 10-minute break precisely? Time now is almost 5 minutes past. We'll be back here. In fact, we start again at 4:15. Not being back, but we start again. Thanks.
Thank you. Can you close the door? First, can we engage the second round and then
we shall also get to the very last round of discussion. Thank you. Are there any further takers? The usual. Not culprit.
Same troubleshooter.
I see a hand of Mr. Abram.
Thank you, Chair.
Chair, the question on the vacancies, those 700 vacancies, has not been responded to. Secondly, Chairperson, there's just something that we need to straighten out. The department must help us to start defining what a smallholder farmer is. Because the DG referred to NERPO, for example, as being smallholder farmers. Now, we have members of NERPO as well as NAFU, Chairperson, who are in their own right, commercial farmers. They own hundreds of cattle, they plow hundreds of hectares of land, they cannot be smallholder farmers. And then, Chairperson, for example, you would have in the communal areas a person who has 200 to 300 cattle. Now, what do you class him as or her as? Is that person a subsistence, a smallholder, or what? We need to understand what is a smallholder farmer. And then, Chairperson, we have this other problem, and that is that the DG has corrected me. I thought it was 50,000 jobs in 1 year. And I said, it's impossible. But Chairperson, even 10,000 is not attainable in 1 year. it gives you an average of 833 per month. And Chair, knowing the departments, all government departments as I do, I say so, that 12 months from now, we will sit here and say that we did not achieve it. So let us rather come up with realistic targets. Because yes, sir, 833 per month, if you divide that by 30 days, what does it give you? You won't be able to get it. And then, Chairperson, you have, for example, the Department of Correctional Services, which has 160,000 warm bodies under their care at any given time. I would like to know whether we have any communication with the Department of Correctional Services. But there are certain places in the country where the department grows its own food. But by and large, it is unfortunately tied up to long-term contracts for the provision of food at highly inflated prices. Whether we are doing something to work with the department and see whether the department cannot be supplied with veggies and that sort of stuff, commodities that are grown by smallholder farmers, for example, as a source of a market. And then, Chair, this business of the NGP, the New Growth Path, where we are expecting agriculture, the commercial sector, to create a certain number of jobs. Again, Chair, I'm not pessimistic, but that is not going to happen. The commercial sector, Chairperson, has got other challenges. Amongst them, the amendments to the Extension of Security of Tenure Act. And unfortunately, that is going to put off a number of people from bringing on new workers on their farms. So that is not going to happen, Chair. As I move in these circles and I hear what people are saying. And then, Chairperson, regarding program outputs on slide 67, nine animal production schemes, milk, beef, small stock, poultry, wool, will be implemented by the fourth quarter of this year. But there are at the moment schemes in place, Chairperson. There are a number of schemes in place that are currently operating. So are we going to put in place new schemes? And if so, Chair, have we done enough research? Are we going to try and reinvent something that is already working? If it needs a little bit of panel beating here and there, let's do so. But let us be very careful not to try and reinvent the wheel again. And finally, Chairperson, we're talking here of 32,000 ID certificates, animal identification marks to be issued by the fourth quarter. I would love to know, if we are talking of 32,000 ID certificates, and then we say in brackets animal identification marks, that sounds a bit of Greek to me. I would like to understand what it actually means and what its impact will be. Chairperson, thank you very much. I think I've asked more than what I should be asking, but thank you, Chair.
Mr. Dutoy?
Thank you, Chairperson. I would try this to get the line back to the policy behind this strategic plan. Now, I see that the German government is involved in training. We've got an agreement there. But I'm curious if they know the difference between a mamba and a pofara. I was just wondering, you know, what can the Germans teach us about farming? Don't they farm differently than us in a different climate with different animals and different diseases? And I'm just curious how this works, because every time there's another country involved in drawing up policies and drawing up laws, and then it's the Canadians, and then it's the Americans, and then it's this and that, and so it goes on. But I don't know whether these people know that when you see a mamba, you run from him, and when you see a pofara, you can just jump over him. The other thing is, on the what for me is lacking in this strategic plan is how does the department national see the interaction with the provinces. I mean, the biggest disasters now has been through lack of coordination or lack of supervision or lack of whatever you can call it in the provinces. I mean, we had the Rift Valley fever, which in which one province bought up all the stuff, and there was no disaster there, and then the rest was a disaster. And now the latest food and mouth catastrophe. I mean, I've asked questions to the department, to the minister, to the department, and you maybe have received already. But this fence, apparently this fence was down for a long time, and the barrier was down. So, but what happened? How come the province, KwaZulu-Natal province, did not fix this or did not report it? Or what happened there? I mean, how can a fence be down and dilapidated and there's money and there's no action, and now we have this catastrophe? It's going to cost us billions. And somewhere between the province and the national department, there's a big gap. I mean, who must we blame? Must we blame the minister? Must we blame the national department? Or must we blame KwaZulu-Natal agricultural department? How does this fit into this strategic plan? How are we going to address these problems? Because I don't see, I did not see, how are we going to improve and cut out the risks? I mean, if this is just the one problem with KwaZulu-Natal, I can imagine what it would be in Mpumalanga and Limpopo. I mean, the Limpopo is almost not a part of the civilized world anymore, it seems. So, and then at Northwest. So where are we going with this? Are we going to solve this crisis that's in the provinces? But it's not in this. It's not in this strategy. I don't see it. It must be a chapter on its own. I mean, we must have a map. We must have a different strategy on different provinces because you're dealing with other entities. You're dealing with different farming methods, different products, different climate. We must have a policy in actual fact divided into provinces. If we're not focusing on each province and each climatic region, at least, how are we going to make this happen? Because we've got a policy, we've got all these targets, but it's not being tied down and aligned with the climate and the provinces. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. First, I need clarity on tractors in Mpumalanga, which are under municipality. I just want to find out why it's not the provincial government who is taking care of those tractors. And is the municipality who is going to account for those factors. And on slide 42, under challenges in the sector, summary says no market for products produced by a smallholder. And what is the plan of department concerning that? Because the Fed was saying that there is 1 billion for these people, but if they don't have market, it's like you give me finances to plow, to fill the land, but you say no, where you are going to sell is up to you.
I just want to find out from the department what is the plan concerning this issue. And again on slide 44, still under challenges. Poor infrastructure to ensure equitable access to development, financed through our, it's not that one. No existent support access to equipment, finance, extension, and training for the established smallholders in the fishery industry. Also there, my question is, what is the plan for department concerning this? Because we cannot keep on saying there is no support, and there is nothing for these people, whereas these people, they are there. They need support also. And also on page slide 46, there is not under challenges. It's program intervention development targets. The increase on small older farmers from 200,000 to 250. If we can know that as we are speaking, seated here in the boardroom, and province by province, how many small older farmers do we have? Because we cannot talk about the increase, whereas we don't know in Limpopo how many do they have, in Mpumalanga how many do they have. I don't think it is a tough question, because I am sure that the national department is liaising, working in hand with the provinces, and also to the commercial farming. It says that they should rise from 780,000 to 800,000 by 2014. One of my I think it was the DG who was saying, it's long has been saying jobs, there is no jobs coming from this sector. Now, I just want to find out from the department, what is the department planning to do, maybe concerning this issue? Yeah, job creation. Thank you.
Chair, thank you. I think most of the questions have been covered, but here's one or two that I just want to get a little bit more clarity on. I think one of the questions was asked by Honourable Abrahams on the commodity associations. I don't think it was addressed. My worry about this is that I see that in this economic development and trade marketing slide, they're talking of creating 12 commodity associations as well as cooperatives. Now, at the moment, I know for a fact that there are about 30 commodity organizations well established in the country that does very much to developmental as well as trade facilitation with all the farmers, and they've got actually many small-scale farmers also part and parcel of it. The problem is, if we want to duplicate that system, we're going to be counterproductive. I think my advice would be rather to talk to them, have a joint strategy of how to support the new people that are coming into the system, so that the expertise that is there and the infrastructure that already exists can be utilized, because most of them have extension offices. They've got consultants in the field, and they do quite a good job. That is the one question. The other one is on the trade, on the embassies. I'm not quite sure if the DAF wants to have staffed offices in countries outside of the embassy. Is it going to be part of the embassies in those countries? because I know most of the embassies have already got facilities where they have agricultural people presenting, representing the country in those areas. So maybe just for clarity. And the last one, Chair, is just on the climate change, where it is addressed under forestry natural resource management. Now, obviously, climate change will eventually have an effect on all the commodities, not only on forestry. I know that forestry is used as a mitigation process, but what I would like to maybe ask is, if the holistic plan of climate change that addresses the agricultural sector, is it incorporated into the national plan, and what are we doing to really, on the ground, work on strategies and plan to have mitigation, adaptation, and whatever the case may be, as far as all the commodities in South Africa is concerned, and what can we contribute to have a greener environment in South Africa? I'll stand with that.
If I were just to quickly, in the absence of any other questions, on the forestry side of things, I see there the 10,000 hectare plantation per annum through the forestry sector charter. My interest there with the resolution at some point, or rather decision at some point, to implement to allocate about 100,000 hectares between Eastern Cape and KZN, whether that has indeed, or if there is any relationship with this plan with that one. We were informed at some point about the establishment of your fisheries, offices in other provinces, whether that has indeed happened. The small-scale fisheries policy is said here that it is going to be implemented in this current financial year. Now, what I'm asking myself is, currently, as we speak, we have your medium term and also all those other allocations of your fishing rights already being distributed. Now, when you implement such a policy, what are you going to be implementing with? Because in my understanding, those rights have already been issued out, so that we don't create expectations with our people. Our people are looking very much forward to this small-scale fishing policy. Now, as a result, if we are going to give them an indication that the implementation is going to take place this year, and yet with the current status quo, it does not happen. The one other part that I thought I might wish to get a sense of, just going through the strat plan document itself, where one of the issues raised by the minister in her foreword, she talks about, and again, for me, this talks to the issue about cooperative governance, whether at province, national, and also local, and also between departments themselves. A point is mentioned here on this document, page Roman figure 8, that there is going to be a move towards, rail transportation of your agriculture products. If we can be given some, ideas to where that process is as we speak now. The last point I wanted to raise, DG, with the figures being given here, it makes it a bit difficult for my functional math, that I learned at school. Unless I hear you are saying these targets have literally to be backdated, if I hear you very well. Because here it says 200,000 to 250,000 by 2014.
If you were to do any extrapolation there, you are literally talking of 17,000 small holder farmers from this year. The plan is from 2011-2012. And then going forward, you are talking here towards 2014. And a number of other figures that have been alluded to. Whether here we're talking about any backdating of such, you know, plans, as you were saying the other just now, that already some of these are being implemented. But the language written here, it does not give that indication. And maybe also how you might wish to put it going forward would be important. Oh, ma'am, I just want to follow up one. You can speak to the mic, Mama.
Slide 8, conclusion. Chairperson, I'm not comfortable with this means individual work plans aligned to the operational plans will be. And the next one also it is will be. I'm not comfortable with will be. But the monitoring and evaluation will be conducted monthly. That I agree. But I'm not comfortable with the two will be. It means they are not there. They are still going to. Because it is but will be. I'm not comfortable with that.
Okay, teacher.
Thank you, Chair. All I can say around targets to Honorable Abraham is that the targets that we're putting here are targets that we think we can live with. We understand that it will not be easy to achieve them, but we think we can live with this target. Then on the, I think on the issue of IT certificates, Dr. Mukhachana will comment on that. Then also on the issue of GMMs and farming, Mr. Mangazana will comment on that one. The issue of our interaction with provinces, the dimension of managing risk, but that is just said, I'd like Dr. Mukhachana to comment on that one, how we as national department can do some of these things. Let me just take one example, for instance, with regard to foot and mouth challenges that we're facing right now. We have had to, much as the whole management of the disease is a provincial function, but we have deployed people because it is national that can comment and outline techniques to respond to the challenge. Okay. We have, as we're talking now, a team from headquarters that is in the Chozini area. And as of yesterday, we're supposed to have sent 18 additional people to help reinforce the roadblock, who will be stationed there for some time. So much as we understand that the core responsibility is services, but when it comes to crises like this, we are learning that we've got to lead, okay, and have to process ourselves from the same. So that's what we're doing right now. And I think that going forward, that will be the kind of approach we'll be taking. We are not going to say when there's a risk facing industry and the country hide behind the legislative provision. We will do everything legally possible to ensure that we intervene and give guidance as a center around these issues. The issue of the, but again, maybe Dr. Mukhachana want to say more about risk management. The issue about the firms, appears to be that it was a fence that was put down as part of the creation of Transfrontier, the Transfrontier Park. So it is the unintended consequence of the rise of our tourism industry that has necessitated new instruments to facilitate tourism. So it seems to be the situation. Okay. So what it talks to is how we need to manage competing claims on space between, on the one hand, sanctity of our agricultural development and its protection and defense, and on the other, benefits of tourism. So the mechanism was a new mechanism introduced by the Democratic Government about 7-8 years ago to ensure that there's seamless animal travel and therefore tourist travel between ourselves, Mozambique, and other closer countries. So that seems to be the situation. But again, Dr. Mukhatan is one on top of the actual effort down there. Now, coming also to some of the issues that I think Mr. Abrams mentioned, we are part of our zero hunger strategy is to ensure that smallholder farmers benefit from the role of the state as a market, be it food for schools, be it schools for the defense, food for business for correctional services. So it is what we are raising, Mr. Abraham. I'm not sure whether Mr. Abraham is here. It's something that is within that. So we are fully aware of that, in your absence. Then the issue of climate change, I think, again, a lot of people raise the issue of climate change and how are we dealing with the different ecological challenges that are presented by the different provinces, etc. The spatial planning, Chairperson, I think I need to protect it from the members. I'm answering their questions, they're talking to each other. The honorable members, I'm trying to answer their questions.
Okay.
Thank you. The issue of climate change and the provinces. Part of the work we're doing now is an attempt to ensure that we work together with provinces in the detailed plans that they're having for the various local municipalities. We're coming with them with competencies that can talk to soil types, things that have not happened before. In the past, anyone wanted funding would just apply for relief. We would not have checked whether what we want to do in this area can be done, whether there's a market for it. No. We are saying we're moving away from that. It has taken us almost 2 months doing this. Since December, we've been doing detailed planning with provinces. We're only left with two other provinces. Then we have a comprehensive plan that says, here in Piedi, you can do pineapples, okay? And there's a market for them. And if need be, you can also have a value addition plant, okay, for that. So your concerns that you're raising around the integration of, and we will only give support only to farmers that will do what we think can be done in that particular area. You cannot come to us, we will say this area is good for this, and want to do something else, and we'll give you money. We won't give you the money. So it's a new way of operating, as far as we're concerned. And we're doing the planning together with the provinces, so that when we talk about the plan of smallholders in South Africa, we're talking with one voice. Okay? There's one plan, not a Eastern Cape plan or a Pretoria plan, one plan. Okay? That will have been negotiated by with everyone. Now, there was a question, I'm not seeing it here, that from Honorable Bosman. About commodity groups that already exist.
Okay.
If these commodity groups were really serious about supporting smallholder people, they would have done the work that we're planning to do for them now. I mean, our people have lived with
hundreds, millions of hectares, doing nothing. Don't tell that commercial does know that that can be done. But this is indeed from where I come from. Everyone knows that indeed can do pineapple. We grew up with pineapple. Okay? They disappeared during the latter part of the sky coming through. Okay? Don't tell you that the farmers in Bathurst, commercial farmers, do not know that trade is good for pineapple. What have they done? They've done nothing. Okay? We have started, people in poor trade started a project, okay, of pineapple. I know the people are involved in it, Mr. Mchai and others. They've done it over the past 10 years. Who has helped them? No one. Okay? So I'm saying if commercial farmers want to help our people, they've had 15 years to demonstrate that. The evidence is not there. But however, it's minuscule. If it's there, it's minuscule. There's not much we can talk about. It's not much. Okay? So what we're saying though, I agree with Honorable Postman. Commercial farmers have a role to play. Okay? I'm not opposed to that. They are good ones, food, they've got a role to play. But we cannot wait for them. Okay? We have got to organize these poor people who have no idea how to make a living. Okay? Well, most of them were used to getting jobs in Joburg. Okay? There are no jobs in Joburg. Okay? Most have lost the skills that my grandfather was taught me on how to live through the land. They don't have the skills. There's an image that agriculture is not the future. To break through all of that morass of inactivity, we have to help the people. We have no choice on this matter. So we will work with them. I'm not saying we will work with them. Actually, even yesterday, I got a call from someone who works for commodity organizations who are saying that they want to be guided by us on how to move forward around transformation in the commodity sector. So we will work with them. But we cannot say that we will not build this other capacity, this independent capacity of those who have been excluded in the past. So we will work not with one leg, but with many legs. On this issue of embassies and agricultural people, they will work within, as this is the case, people work within the Rome mission. Okay? They are employed by us. Okay? But politically, they are guided by Ambassador Mchezi. Okay? They report to her on their day-to-day work, but they have got a specific mandate for us. What we are saying, I mentioned when I was present, I said we want to put in senior people, not ordinary graduates. We want to have people who understand national interest, who understand what has to be done and achieved for the country, and we are going to put them in this dynamic, growing sector, countries in the world, in BRICS. And we're going to benefit, it's not smallholder farmers. The bulk of the people, that's part of responding to commercial agricultural interest. It's commercial agriculture that's going to benefit on the Chinese market. It's then going to benefit on the Brazilian market, on the Russian market, you know, etc. So we're saying we want to put in senior people there so that these interests can be attended to. I think on the issue of there was a question Chairperson asked about, I think 100,000. I'm not sure what it was about. But with regard to fisheries in Eastern Cape and KZN, Mr. Smula will talk about that. The small scale fisheries policy has been in development for too long, wanted to be implemented now. On the issue of agro-logistics, okay, there is work that has been done, but we now need to take it to commercial agriculture, because we've got some views on it. Okay? We now have to work together and say, this is what we think should be the elements of the plan. Okay? We're scheduled for me with my counterpart in transport, so that we can talk that in this unfolding place that they have on transport, that agricultural logistics is not lost in that period. We'll be working on that. From the point of view of smallholder farmers, we've got a clear plan. There's someone who's already engaged to design agro-logistics for us. We're speaking to some experts on logistics for the Zulu Hunger Campaign. I signed a letter 2 days, 3 days ago to Italy. We're bringing someone to Italy because they've got an experience of smallholder farmers. They'll help to design our logistics for us and so that smallholder farmers can be able to support the
the urban center.
Were you saying Zuluhanga?
I understand most of our people in KZN are hungry, but I was not saying Zuluhanga. I was saying Zuluhanga. I think I've tried to answer most of the questions. My colleagues will comment on the other one. Thank you very much.
There were two questions asked on three. One was on animal identification marks as reflected in the SARC trade. We said 32,000. This is the average of what we delivered in the previous year. You're talking about the animal identification marks which have been issued to the individual farmers. Okay. Now, on the issue of the schemes, we have six schemes currently running. We are talking about expanding on the current ones and also coming up with new ones. I think the focus at the moment will be on the priority one, is the one on the beef and the guana fatwa de komu. Look into the lessons learned, and we're working together with the ARC because the ARC is our implementing agency on the schemes. With regard to the FMD, the DG has answered most of the questions, but I just want to indicate that we're talking about three different fences. It's a fence on the eastern border of South Africa, bordering Mozambique. There's a fence on the south, on the northern part of KwaZulu-Natal between South Africa and Mozambique. And there's a fence in KwaZulu-Natal which is called the protection zone. So those are the three fences. And we are doing the feasibility study for people to check the cost implication. In the past 2 years, we upgraded 45 kilometer fence between South Africa and Mozambique. The big challenge there is because we're putting up the fences, and what's happening currently because of the withdrawal of the patrollers from this SNDF, what then can people continue to damage the fence because there's a lot of trade and criminal activity which is occurring between the two borders. Now, we are talking to the SNDF currently with the current outbreak. We've requested them to actually deploy people. And the biggest challenge there is that we'll have to upgrade the 25-kilometer fence, which have been found to where the people have cut it, to actually exchange animal. Now, on that border between South Africa and Mozambique, there's what we call Ndumu Game Reserve. Now, in Ndumu Game Reserve bordering there, on top there, there's part of the land claim. We are talking to land affairs. We are not just, I think the DG explained it, that we are working with the SAPS, we are working with the Defense Force, we are working with land affairs, because in that part of the fence in Ndumu, there's that part of the land claim where people also, when the fence is being constructed, they go in and also cut the fence. So I think when we do that, start a briefing to the portfolio committee will actually improve that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG and Chairperson and honorable members. I will respond to two issues, the one on climate change and the second one being the afforestation 10,000 per annum. Starting with climate change, the question came from Honorable Bosman. Your observation is that climate change has been placed within forestry. Actually, what has happened is that there has been a realignment of functions. Climate change is not part of forestry, but rather the forestry program will now also address natural resources management, and there under you will find climate change. So the intention is not for climate change to be aligned to forestry per se, but it's for climate change to address broadly natural resources as they apply to agriculture, forestry, and fisheries. May I also take the opportunity, Chairperson, just to inform the honorable members that in terms of climate change, we have made some progress. We already have a draft climate change adaptation plan for the sector, meaning agriculture, forestry, and fisheries. We've also done what is referred to as a greenhouse inventory report that is available for agriculture. Going forward, we're looking at better ways of addressing climate change so that we're more responsive. We will come up with a national atlas on climate change, and we'll try and explore better ways of working with members of the public, public education on farming for the future. May I also just indicate that we're working very hard to make sure that we are ready for the hosting of the conference that is coming at the end of the year. So in conclusion, Chairperson, in as far as climate change is concerned, even though we are quite aware that trees are seen as valuable because they give us what are called carbon sinks, going forward, the conservation, the promotion of forestry, fisheries, and agricultural resources will be taken care of when we look at climate change. The second question related to afforestation coming from the Chairperson. Chairperson, your observation is indeed correct. We may recall that in May 2008, the forestry sector signed off a charter for transformation. One of the commitments in that charter is not only for government, it's for government and the private sector, is to work together to make sure that in the next 10 years, going back from 2008, we do have afforestation up to an extent of 100,000 hectares. And it is correct to say the geographic areas that were identified for this particular afforestation intention is the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. And we've done a lot since. The only challenge that we still have is water use licensing. But the department, working with the Department of Trade and Industry and the IDC, have gone a long way in assisting communities to make sure that they comply with the regulatory framework. In terms of the target in the strategic plan, we put in a target at 10,000 per annum, but it's not restricted. In any way where we are able to obtain more licenses, it will be acceptable that we may afforest more than 20 or 10,000 hectares per annum, but the underwriting factor is the regulatory processes, especially as far as it applies to water use licensing. Thank you very much.
To conclude on this climate change, we are taking advantage of the fact that there's going to be COP17 in our country in November, and we have appointed someone who will be the public expression of climate change and agriculture, and will unfold the program that will highlight the challenge of climate change to agriculture. We've brought someone, PhD, to work together with this person, who will assist them in profiling the challenge of our sector in climate change, to make use of this present of us hosting climate change in agriculture. But the minute they will make those announcements, and that's the proceeding of the committee. Thank you, sir.
A question related to fisheries has not been answered.
Yes, thanks, Chairperson. I think I will agree with the comment that was made. Indeed, in the strategic plan, we are alluding to the fact that the budget that we've had that seems to provide support for extension services is largely being for agriculture. And I think on page 37 of the strategic plan document, we allude to that fact. And moving forward, we are proposing that I think the issue of the one-stop shop, where we have a consolidated funding mechanism, should be able to look beyond just agriculture but deal with issues, concerns about providing that kind of a similar support to fisheries as well as the forestry sectors. I think this is how we intend to deal with these issues. Of comprehensive support for all the sectors. And also linked to that, with respect to how we intend to expand the fisheries portfolio beyond what is happening within the Western Cape, we are currently engaging with stakeholders in all the other provinces on an active program to try to engage and create a platform whereby we will be able to launch all the various kind of programs that we have. So there is a program of trying to ensure that these other provinces where there hasn't been that much of activity with respect to fisheries, that there's a plan, a formal plan to engage all those communities. And you know, as I speak now, a week ago we have been in the Eastern Cape just to talk about the rights allocations there with the communities, and that's part of what we are, you know, actively engaged in. The other issues related to the policy, I think the DG has touched on that, but suffice for me to say that we are mindful, Chair, of the fact that yes, indeed, the allocation of long-term rights, if we do not synchronize our processes, may compromise our ability to implement the small-scale fisheries policy, because the fact remains that the allocations have been determined from a scientific study as to what is actually practically possible in terms of bringing new role players. But we are now trying to implement a system whereby we are holding the allocation of new rights, which are about to expire in 2012-2011 actually period, to stop that process until we finalize the strategy and being able to implement it, so that we synchronize those processes and we don't have any of the issues we would like to drive in the policy being compromised by what we have already committed. So indeed, we will not just be raising expectations and not have any substantive issues to offer to the new skills, small-scale fisher folks that are coming on board. So we will be able to synchronize those processes. Thanks.
I'm interested on this very latter part. What are you saying, in fact?
Chair, I'm saying that we are mindful of the fact that the rights allocations on the long term, a lot of the permit holders, and those are expiring in the 2020.
So I did hear all of that, but what I'm trying to ask, brother, is you are saying for year 2011-2012, there are some of these rights that are expiring. As a result of that, before anything goes, those are going to be synchronized with the plans as part of your, and which are those species you are referring to?
Chair, the species that are covered are really in the very most actively, actually the high-value economic ones, like the hake, and then also the west coast rock lobster, and those are the, I think, three key ones in which we'll be trying to make sure that the implementation of the new policy also make sure that those new entrants do benefit from the allocations on actually in that regard. But the majority of the actually of the rights are actually beginning in 2012-18, where I'm saying all of the processes, starting with the ones that are expired in 2011, moving forward, we are going to stop that process until we're able to implement the policy, so that the new allocation take into account the new entrants and those that have been existing. That's really the gist of what we're trying to do. Because we are implementing this policy while we've got other people that have got rights, and we need to ensure that the implementation does take into account the demand that is out there. And through our stakeholder engagement, we have actually determined that there's a lot of interest, and I think we need to be able to look holistically as to how we're going to be able to do the allocations.
You want to make a follow-up question? Okay.
When the current rights holders have to, if they lose any of those rights or quotas or any, you know, right to fish, has the department done a preliminary study of the cost of the disengagement of writing off assets? And obviously, if you can't go on with the business, you've got to get rid of your assets. If you rip off the boat, the factory, and other assets, is it going to be to be bought by others, or is it? And if you have new right holders, what would be the cost be of re-establishing the capital cost of re-establishing these enterprises with new assets? And would it be profitable, considering that now it's more expensive to get into business? So these are just questions I have around the economic viability of the policy. So I understand why there's a demand for rights, and I understand that the rights can't go on forever. But there is a economic and capital consequence. And I understand that you can't answer a question now because it's in the future, but have you thought about these economic studies and how are we going to address it?
Now, what Mr. Du Toit is raising must be a question that gets to be asked in another session. I'm proposing because there are a lot more other related issues on the same subject matter, especially as it relates to the small-scale fishing policy. Currently, as we speak as well, there is another process of review of the current right holders, because I have definite views on that one, that process must of necessity benefit that small-scale fishery person. It's a great opportunity for that person, so that we play also for the very first time an open card game on this particular review process. For a very long time, it has been a process literally kept close to a chest. I think it is high time that as we do our oversight work, we make sure that that process is now open. So that's why I'm motivating that we hang on this particular one for another session, that we must deal extensively with this issue. You still want to respond, DJ?
All I need to say to Honorable Troy, the concern that is expressing a valid concern. And at this stage, we can't say much, but we are involved in very important discussions with the sector, in which a win-win situation we think can be achieved. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
Okay, I think, as I said, that's a discussion for another time on this very important area of our work. We should say for now we are done with the department, and thanks. Sorry that we took a lot longer time, and I trust that everyone has benefited from this important engagement. We certainly will take a quick 30-minute lunch instead of 1 hour, and then come back and follow the program that we have. I tell you that the OBP and ARC and NECA will benefit from the presence of all other members of the department who have been benefiting OBP, ARC, and NACHA. So it is certainly going to be a mutually beneficial process. Thank you. We out, we back, say, around 1:45. Thanks. It's a thing, a lunch, as we walk out, we just have to begin about.
Okay. Not even three.